Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. It is the 28th of May, 2026, and we have a gigantic show for you today. We'll be joined by Frank Wright in the next hour. He's the man that we played his video yesterday, went absolutely viral over the weekend with his stream of consciousness, off-the-cuff, extemporaneous exploration of the many woes of UK politics. And we'll be talking about Europe a lot today. I feel like I've spent the last week or so just playing video after video after video of the Muslim invasion of Europe. And we're going to continue that tradition today because I have like 100 more because it's a holiday. It's a Muslim holiday. So they're really feeling, you know, they're vibing out there. They're out there trying to take over European cities and succeeding in doing so. So we're going to talk a lot about that. And we're going to talk a lot about crime and some new developments with the Trump administration and their new counterterrorism strategy, which I think I'm connecting the dots on. I think I figured out something pretty troubling. And we're going to pick up sort of where we left off yesterday, talking about just crime in general. But yes, we will also be getting into what's going on with Iran, and I got a ton of videos about what's happening in Israel overall. But there's a theme that I want to hit on today that I think we'll have time to go to this video. Clip 21 here. This is a speech almost everybody listening to my voice knows, because in the later part of the speech, John F. Kennedy Jr. talked about a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that we were facing. And he actually started that speech naming the monolithic and ruthless conspiracy. It's called communism, but he did it in a very particular way. And I want to go to clip 21 now. This is John F. Kennedy Jr. in a speech shortly before he was assassinated, in this case to a bunch of people from the press. And I think this is very interesting. Let's watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate very much your generous invitation to be here tonight. You bear heavy responsibilities these days. And a article I read some time ago reminded me of how particularly heavily the burdens of present-day events bear upon your profession. You may remember that in 1851, New York Herald Tribune, under the sponsorship and publishing of Horace Greeley, employed as its London correspondent an obscure journalist by the name of Karl Marx. We are told that foreign correspondent Marx, stone broke, and with a family ill and undernourished, constantly appealed to Greeley and managing editor Charles Dana for an increase in his munificent salary of $5 per installment, a salary which he and Engels ungratefully labeled as the lousiest petty bourgeois cheating. But when all his financial appeals were refused, Marx looked around for other means of livelihood and fame, eventually terminating his relationship with the Tribune and devoting his talents full-time to the cause that would bequeath to the world the seeds of Leninism, Stalinism, revolution, and the Cold War. If only this capitalistic New York newspaper had... had treated him more kindly. If only Marx had remained a foreign correspondent.
So that's going to be our theme for the day. I'll explain it on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. It's the Alex Jones Show. It's an important message. In case you didn't get it, I'll explain it. Stay with us. Make sure you're following us on X at AJN Live. Make sure you're following us on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. We got a bunch of stories to cover today, a bunch of big breaking news. We'll get to all of it. But I think that one of the most beautiful things about the Alex Jones Network is, yes, we're going to hit the biggest stories. Yes, we're going to tell you about what's going on in Europe with the Muslim takeover. We have a giant guest today, Frank Wright, absolutely brilliant man in all things UK politics, but also in the topic of surrogacy. So we're going to touch on that a little bit. We're going to talk about the AI data centers and the Flock cameras, and we're going to bring you all of that breaking news and try to give you the real story behind the headlines, as we always do. But I also feel that we have a little bit of leeway here, more so than other outlets who strictly deliver the news, because what we're trying to convey here is not just the facts as they stand, but the narrative of what's happening to humanity and how we get back on track and where we went so wrong. So in the first 5 minutes there, I played the very beginning, the first couple of lines of a very famous speech that John F. Kennedy delivered shortly before being assassinated. And you've probably heard clips from this speech before. The classic one is, "We are faced by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that deals in subversion rather than honesty," right? He's talking about honesty is anathema to an open society. A society like ours cannot stomach secrecy and secret societies. And it's often invoked by conspiracy theorists because he's talking about a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy of secret societies. Yeah, he was kind of our guy. He was kind of on our side. But I found sort of the most interesting part of that speech was that very beginning. And in case you couldn't understand, because the audio wasn't great, or in case you didn't get the joke he was making, he essentially says, he's talking to a group of New York press people, the leaders of the newspapers and television studios at the time. And what he says, "You bear heavy responsibility these days." He says, "In an article I read some time ago reminded me of how particularly heavily the burdens of the present day fall on your shoulders, your profession, the news media." He says, "In 1851, it was the New York Herald Tribune, under the sponsorship and publishing of Horace Greeley, who employed Karl Marx as a foreign correspondent." And he basically says, Karl Marx asked for a modest raise to help his ailing family, and Horace Greeley and the New York newspaper denied it, and sort of making a joke. And when I first read it, I thought he was making sort of a veiled threat at the news media, going, you know, communism sort of came out of you guys' ranks, right? Y'all know that. I thought that's where he was going with it at first. But he says, "When all of his financial appeals were refused, Marx looked around for other means of livelihood and fame, eventually terminating his relationship with the Tribune and devoting his talents full-time to the cause that would bequeath the world the seeds of Leninism, Stalinism, revolution, and the Cold War. If only this capitalistic New York newspaper had treated him more kindly, if only Marx had remained a foreign correspondent, history might have been different. And I hope publishers will bear this lesson in mind next time they receive a poverty-stricken appeal for a small increase in the expense account for an obscure newspaper man." Right, sort of making a joke. But what he's pointing to is actually a very real phenomenon. And the reason I'm bringing this up is not for a purely historical examination. How this applies to the modern world and how relevant it still is, and how we have very much so lost this mindset and seem... It's because we don't understand this process that's taking place that all of our attempts to solve the problem only make it worse. Because this was sort of a commonly understood idea back in the day, back when communism had a country, back when the Soviet Union was this powerful force on the world stage and we were defending against it and actually had to contend with it and explain how our ideology and worldview contradicted the communist worldview. And deciding actually it was never strictly a contest between capitalism and communism. This was not really a war over economic systems. It was a war over ideology and worldview, which is why during the Cold War, we changed our motto from E Pluribus Unum to In God We Trust, right? It wasn't In Money We Trust. We didn't put money on our altars. We put God on our money because we said, this is the difference. This is what separates us from communism. It's the fact that we believe in God versus this atheistic, you know, hell world that communism creates. But all this is to say that it's a very obvious feedback loop where capitalists or exploiters of whatever stripe cause pain, cause strife, cause chaos. And then the communists use that chaos, use that strife, use that poverty and pain and suffering to progress their cause. And that's what JFK was pointing out there, is people only go to communism when they're miserable. People only need a reason to, you know, rebel against the system if the system is abusing them or not serving them. If instead, you know, the capitalist masters with the billions of dollars can, you know, maybe spare a couple dollars or two to make your workers happy, it actually works out in the long run. It's actually a good investment in the long run. It's sort of the, you know, Henry Ford versus Dodge, you know, dichotomy, where Ford wanted to actually pay his workers well so they could afford the cars that they were making, because he knew that down the line that would end up bringing you a good return on investment, especially if you're thinking about it in a societal way. But again, this was not a unique view. It's a view that we've lost, but it used to be well understood by everybody. I actually took this picture in a thrift store. I should have bought it, honestly, but I just took the picture. It's an ad from the Saturday Evening Post, and it's actually a ad for like Liberty Mutual or something, but it's from the 1940s, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a ad in the Saturday Evening Post. I put the image in there in the Dave Show folder, guys. It's called The Contented Workman, or just Contented Workman. The Saturday Evening Post, The Contented Workman, the enemy of unrest, says it's a sixth in a story of industrial justice. This was written in the 40s in a extremely popular American paper, magazine. Anarchy is the child of despair. Apart from the cranks, the money-lusting exploiters of ignorance, and the temperamental nihilist, nobody wants to go red. Men go red only if they are bitterly disappointed. Let a man feel that he's oppressed and exploited, that his employer neither knows nor cares if he lives or dies, that whatever happens, he has nothing to lose, and he listens with conviction to the agitator's vindictive foamings and to the promise of communist heaven on earth. But the contented workman, with his family, his home, his savings, sure of fair treatment by his employer, secure against accident, is immune to the virus of the agitator. Class war, revolution, blood, murder. What promise lies in these thoughts for the contented workman? So this is going to be sort of the foundation of the show today, because it goes into everything that we're talking about. So as we get into the news of the day, just keep this in mind. This is the framework that we're operating on. Because you'll see in very stark relief the way in which, the inversion of this message is being employed. Cause strife, cause chaos, cause your workmen, your employees to be discontented, and you find fertile ground for growing communistic ideas. And those are already taking root in a lot of our major cities because of the exploitation of capitalism, or whatever you want to call it. I'm by no means a communist, which is why we need to shield ourselves against communism. It's one of these ironic things that if you go, hey guys, it's the excesses of capitalism, the abuses of capitalism, it's the rights being violated by capitalistic endeavors instead of governmental ones, it's an equal problem. It's just as big. It's just as, strident of an issue to deal with as just the open communist. And then you get called a communist because you're criticizing capitalism. This is a false dichotomy. Capitalism, in other words, worshiping capital and designing your whole worldview around capital, leads us to where we are now, because you strip the humanity from it and you just have a giant open marketplace of exploitation. Whoever exploits the most wins. And that sucks. That's a terrible way to organize your society. And that is the way we're organizing our society. So when we talk about the crime, when we talk about the offshoring of jobs, when we talk about the importation of hostile foreigners, understand that it's all on purpose. Understand that it's the first step in the path towards communism. First, you need people to be miserable. First, you need to destroy hope in the current system so that people look for an alternative one, even a radical one, because anything's got to be better than where we are now. That's the mindset that they're trying to foster and create and inculcate into people so that they can turn them against the system and institute a significantly worse system. And this isn't speculation. This is historical. This is history, if you know it, right? The czar in Russia probably wasn't the nicest guy. He had some imperialistic tendencies. They had some dungeons that they would throw political agitators in and not treat them very nicely. And so the communists in Russia at the time used that outrage, used those abuses to say, look how terrible these guys are. We need a new system. And in sweeps communism with the Gulag Archipelago and significantly worse abuses in every possible way for everybody in society. But this is the tried and practiced, tried and true method to institute communism. And if the ruling system is treating everybody well and delivering justice, they actually have to go in and disrupt that and stop the justice from being delivered and stop the prosperity from being created, in order to make everybody mad and despondent enough to actually accept communism. And then they are delivered something significantly worse. But again, keep this in mind as we move forward. So I want to pick up sort of where we left off yesterday with the topic of crime. So I never actually got to the myriad examples I was talking about, but these are all from the last couple of months, three actually not even deep blue places, Maryland a little bit, but all of these places have a very similar organization where you've got the big cities that are totally blue. I mean, I guess it's the way all through the country, but the states that we're talking about here are Colorado, Virginia, and Maryland, which none of these are like deep blue. They aren't California, right? They aren't Washington State, where you would expect this stuff to get through. These states were purple for a while, maybe until the last few years. But regardless, this is the inexplicable stuff from the Democrats. Stuff I was talking about yesterday, if you were watching, where it's like, who is this even for? What is even the argument for doing this? Who could this possibly benefit other than rapists and murderers and criminals? It's truly mind-boggling. So from January this year, Virginia Democrats frustrate law enforcement with bill axing prison time for violent crime, expert warns. Law enforcement experts push back on a bill affecting crimes including child pornography possession. Virginia House Minority Leader Terry Kilgore joined Fox News to discuss the slate of bad bills percolating in the legislature as Governor Spanberger takes sweeping day one actions, including breaking with ICE. The new bill proposed by Democrats in the Virginia state legislature is raising concerns regarding the removal of minimal prison sentences for various violent felony crimes. Within days of Democrat Governor Abigail Spanberger being sworn in, members of her party introduced a flurry of amendments looking to end mandatory minimum sentences for various crimes within the state. They effectively remove minimum sentencing for manslaughter, rape, possession of and distribution of child pornography, assaulting a law enforcement officer, and other repeat violent felonies. But why, though? I guess the only question to ask is, why the hell would you pass this law? Who is this serving? Are we looking around and going, man, everything's so safe, everything's so perfect. I could eat off the ground in the subway station, and my kids walk to school by themselves, no supervision needed. The only thing we have to deal with now is this constant, you know, persistent threat of overcharging child pornographers for their crimes. Gosh, the last problem we have to solve is that these poor, innocent manslaughterers are being sent away for just too long. We've got to ban those minimum sentences. Who is this helping? Who is calling for this? Who is voting for this? The answer is nobody's voting for this. The answer is Abigail Spanberger was the first and probably most successful example of the new strategy the Democrats are pursuing in front of everybody, where they are saying in their own words, like, look up, what's his name? Raging Cajun dumbass. I can't remember his name right now. I'm too mad. But, you know, he is out there going, you know, we just got to run normal people. We got to run normal seeming people, and they don't need to tell people what they're going to do. But once they're in office, that's when they hit the ground running and really do what they want to do. Like the socialists, they are open about this. You want to talk about destroying democracy? This is dissecting the fundamental fabric of democracy, because they understand that their policies are unpopular. They know that they will not get elected if they're honest. So they think the virtuous thing to do is to lie about their policies until they're in office, when it's too late to stop them. That was Abigail Spanberger. She ran as a moderate. She ran as, I just want to help, you know, I just want to help families and struggling families in Virginia, you know, just need a little bit of help and law and order and all that. And then she gets into office and she rules like Mao Zedong. This is the strategy that they're pursuing. They're doing it openly. They're admitting it. They're saying it's what they're doing. And they're trusting that the Democratic base is too damn stupid and disconnected to even realize it or care. And unfortunately, it's working. So Virginia decides, you know, the best thing we need to do is to lower the sentencing, lower the punishment, make it easier to get away with child pornography, rape, manslaughter, and all these other horrible crimes. Because why not? Because that's the biggest problem to deal, you know, that we have to deal with in the world. But they're not the only ones. Colorado, of course, is following along. Proposed measure would do away with first-degree murder charge and some unintentional killings. It's a very soft way of putting it. Incidents like the one in Jefferson County, where a rock hurled from an oncoming vehicle killed a young woman, would no longer be subject to first-degree murder charge and the life sentence that would go along with it, under a measure working its way through the state legislature. So there was a case in Jefferson County, Colorado, where teenage kids threw a rock through the front windshield of a car going down the highway, killed the woman, her car crashed. They watched her crash, didn't render aid or help her anyway, actually went around, circled back to drive past the car to film the outcome of the crime they committed. Yeah, that's murder. I mean, what the hell else is it? The woman died. Go tell the woman's family, well, you know, he was just throwing rocks at cars on the highway. He didn't mean to kill her, so it'd really be unfair. No, what's unfair is she's dead now, is that she never gets another chance. She was given a life sentence by this little scumbag, and he should go away for life. It's what I would want if it was my wife, if it was my daughter that this happened to. I would want the kid alone in a room for a couple hours with a pair of tweezers and a buzzsaw, and then I would feel satisfied justice had been delivered. But the California, or the Colorado, rather, legislature has decided they don't need to be punished as harshly for this. I mean, it's just kids, you know, killing people. What's the big deal? What's the big, you know, what's going to happen? They're going to get out and do it again if you don't punish them harshly? Yes, exactly. That's what's going to happen. This is just, again, I can't even say it's retarded. I can't even say it's stupid. It's malicious. It's evil. And all these blue states are doing it. You tell me why. The bill would change what crimes would constitute a first-degree murder charge under a theory known as extreme indifference. The law allows prosecutors to file that charge in killings that are not intentional, but the results of action that constitute extreme indifference to the value of human life. For example, Joe Koenig, the high school senior who hurled a cantaloupe-sized rock at an oncoming car and killed Alexa Bartell, could not be charged with first-degree murder under the measure as it's currently written. Why? But why, though? But who is this helping? Again, it's like, is there a big rash of, like, poor innocent kids being thrown into jail because I can't even come up with a fantastical metaphor for how this would make sense. It doesn't make any sense. Okay? Virginia, Colorado, Maryland, they're all doing this where they are lowering the consequences of horrible violent crimes that ruin people's lives to let the perpetrators off easier. It's just what they're doing. I can't explain it other than that. We'll get to the Maryland example in just a second, but just elsewhere in the legal system, more inexplicable decisions being made by people who despise you and are hurting you on purpose. Governor Newsom was recently discovered to have supported a program in California to give prison inmates iPads with internet connections. And lo and behold, to absolutely nobody's surprise, the criminals were using the iPads to groom minors and watch pornography and commit more crimes. Because why would you give prisoners in jail iPads, you absolute morons? While the prisoner tablet program seems to have been funded primarily through CDCR California state funds, the federal government nonetheless sends millions of federal tax dollars to California via grants, the intent of which is criminal rehabilitation, crime prevention, or state and local law enforcement or court support. Since 2021, BSCC has received nearly $70 million from grants from the Bureau of Justice Assistance and all these other organizations. In the same period, California organizations, institutions, municipal governments have received around $16.5 million. Basically, they've spent millions and millions and millions of dollars helping prisoners to access the internet so they can do things like this. The most apparent example is Nathaniel Diaz, convicted in 2023 of sexual crimes against a 12-year-old girl who, with his state-issued prison tablet, began sexually messaging and exploiting the same underage girl. Diaz's indictment also reveals the exceptionally weak safeguards on California's prisoner tablet program, in addition to having two accomplices receive and send sexually explicit images of the victim to him. Diaz was somehow able to call the victim thousands of times. So, you know, do you understand the line I'm drawing, the connection I'm drawing, that like this is on purpose? There's no way these people are actually trying to make the world a safer place. They are literally just on the side of the prisoners. They're on the side of the collapse. They're on the side of the violent crime. They literally are, because they understand that if you can create a completely dysfunctional, retarded system of madness, people will accept any other alternative, in this case, communism. And so you have this. Maryland's Youth Charging Reform Act signed into law. Under the Reform Act, a 16 or 17-year-old charged with offenses such as kidnapping, robbery, assault, third-degree sex offense, or an array of gun crimes will start in juvenile court instead of being charged as an adult. So again, you've got 16 and 17-year-olds out there committing heinous violent crimes, and I guess the Maryland legislators' biggest concern is that they not be held to account for them, that they be able to get away with them, or at least be treated in as soft as a way as possible. Now, I'm not sure if we'll be able to get to the pertinent moment here, but let's go to clip number 24, because Tucker Carlson recently interviewed Nayib Bukele, who tells you exactly what I've been telling you since the Parkland massacre in Florida, where it was determined that the Florida had changed its laws to no longer convict underage people. So all of the gangs started using underage people to commit their crimes. Here's Nayib Bukele talking about how this was the beginning of MS-13 as well.
Yeah. MS-13 is one of the major gangs.
And they are satanic also.
That was my question. So very
I'm
little.
Sorry.
No. But I would hope you will explain it, because very little has been written in the West about this.
They're satanic, yes.
But actually, literally, can you explain?
Well, they didn't start as a satanic organization. They MS-13 started in Los Angeles, in the U.S., because Salvadorans weren't allowed to sell drugs by the Mexican gangs. So they created a gang that was called the 18th Street Gang, because they basically wanted to sell drugs in a street that was 18th Street over there. But then division started they started dividing themselves and started infighting, so they created the MS-13. And then MS-13 started outgrowing the other gangs, and they started exporting the organization to other parts of the U.S.
All right, we're going to pick it up right there when we come back and continue to talk about how the crime, the chaos, the misery, it's all on purpose, it's all by design, it's all done by people who hate you. We're going to return to this interview with Nayib Bukele and Tucker Carlson right at the pertinent moment, because we just keep doing this. We keep being stuck in this cycle where there's a problem usually caused by socialist policies, like criminals running rampant on the street. And so in come the socialists to suggest more solutions to the problems that they caused. And they're like, if there's too many criminals, what if we stop arresting the criminals? And really, we should. There's a video that, like, I mean, it's I don't know, some Black Lives Matter thing. So it's a bunch of black guys that are like lawyers or something. They're standing around playing pool. And one of them's like, if you stop arresting people for crime, the crime rates go down. It's genius. And it's like, that's literally what they think the solution is. And it turns out, kind of. We saw it in D.C., Washington, D.C., how the captains would show up to a felony murder scene and they'd go, ooh, this wouldn't look good on the balance sheet. So let's call it a, aggravated robbery. Let's get it down to a misdemeanor somehow. That way it won't reflect badly on us, because, again, there's this. It really all does go back to like subjectivity versus objectivity. And maybe that's not the right label, but the idea is the appearance over the reality. That, like, no, we want the numbers to be lower because that reflects the reality. We want the crime to be lower. We want the numbers to accurately reflect a lowering of the crime rate. To these people, it's like, no, but we lowered the crime rate by just not punishing the criminal. So the amount of crime in reality, still just as high, but it looks lower, so problem solved, right? Right? Just like you want the black community to be up, to par with the academic achievement of the white society, and one would think if that was actually your concern, you would actually want to elevate the black community, you would actually want to bring them up to the level of white people, but instead what happens is they lower the qualification requirements for black people, so they are technically achieving getting into medical school or whatever else, but not really. But you're not actually elevating the black community. You're just devaluing the achievements that they're reaching for. There's this ubiquitous kind of sentiment going around where it's just like, well, if it looks like it's working, then it's working. And we'll just double down on that. So it looks bad to have a bunch of children being charged as adults because they're committing violent crimes. So now they're just not going to charge them as adults with the crimes they committed. They're going to charge them as juveniles. Try to, disadvantage them less, even though they're the criminals that are injuring and killing and hurting other people. So now 16 and 17-year-olds in Maryland will no longer be charged as adults. Here's Nayib Bukele talking about the effect of this exact policy when it was implemented in El Salvador. Let's watch.
And they started exporting the organization to other parts of the U.S., and when Bill Clinton decided to deport those guys, he didn't tell our government at the time, I'm deporting this criminal. They just, send them here. And they came. There were a few, but unchecked. At the same time, some laws were passed to protect minors from imprisonment. And of course, the gangs used that to recruit 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds.
So the beginning was, no way. Is that what happened? Oh, my gosh. They actually knew what the law was and then changed their behavior so that they were then using the law to their advantage? What? That's crazy. I can't believe it. So it's going to happen in Maryland, too. It's, again, it's not an accident. They know this is going to be the case. The only possible result of passing this law is that minor people under the age of majority, will just be committing more crimes. They'll be recruited by the gangs specifically to commit crimes. And they'll be told, it's fine, you're a minor, you won't get in trouble. Just like how the immigrant kid who ran over the police officer in Las Vegas was caught on body cam going, nah, this is a Soros DA. I'm going to get let out in no time. They know what the consequences are, and they change their behavior on the basis of the laws changing. If you have more harsh laws, they commit less crime. It's actually not complicated. Nayib Bukele showed with incontrovertible proof that you can solve a problem significantly worse than the problem we have now, and he showed you the way to do it. The way to do it is to embody those values that built America in the first place, of being harshly unwilling to live with a bunch of criminals in your society, to crack down on them, to be extremely intolerant of anybody breaking the law and hurting innocent people. That's the solution. And to imbue your law enforcement with the, you know, righteous fury to bring about justice. That's the solution. That's the answer. Of course, we showed the video last week and talked about it again yesterday of Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson saying, the police are overwhelmed. You can't arrest your way out of crime. It's exactly what you do. It's like saying you can't spray water on a fire to put it out. No, that's the solution to the problem, actually. Well, he's come out with a different statement now. He's got a new, you know, organization to focus his ire on. It couldn't possibly be the mobs of teenagers doing the bad thing. That they can't possibly be held to account. They're not, they don't have agency. They don't have, you know, humanity. They don't have a soul and a, you know, ability to recognize the consequence of their actions and change their behavior in accordance. They're animals. They're basically like beasts, like savages, according to Brandon Johnson, apparently, because he's not even talking about trying to do anything to the teenagers. It's obviously social media. That's the problem. Let's go to clip number 13 here. This is Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson about his solution for the mobs of quote unquote teenagers, aka black adults, destroying cars and burning down businesses for fun, because it's what they do for fun. Let's watch. Clip 13.
We prevent the vast majority of these from ever taking place. You know, there is a effort in city council to hold these social media apparatuses accountable. I believe that we should continue to explore that. And I'm going to continue to work with Alderman Hall around that. It's why we're actually taxing these big tech companies for the role that they have played in harming the mental health and well-being of our young people.
Holding social media companies accountable for harming the mental well-being of our young people. That's his response to the continual outbreak of violence and riotous conditions because of these teen takeover nights. We cannot incarcerate our way out of violence. Incarceration is racist. It's immoral. It's unholy. In Kathy Hochul, we don't have cashless bail in the state of New York. Yeah, I mean, again, it's not complicated. It's not, it shouldn't be confusing. People are just deliberately deconstructing our society, and they're causing the problem that they're then offering the solution to. The problem in this case is they let mobs of teenagers run riot and destroy businesses and people's lives and attack innocent people and do nothing to hold them to account. And their solution is to fine social media companies. It's genuine madness. It is actually genuine insanity. If they really believed it, if they actually thought that this was an appropriate response, it would be madness. It's not madness. It's a lie. It's just deception. It's just they're deflecting from the actual cause of the problem to something that they just want to do anyway, control social media companies. And in this case, I guess, hide the consequences of their policies through the social media companies. See, they get to legalize prostitution and drug dealing in your neighborhood, which is followed by an outbreak of violent crime, like we saw in Seattle. But then you're not allowed to raise barricades. You're not allowed to protect yourself. If you try to stop the influx of criminality into your neighborhood, it's you that will, you know, pay the price for it. And yeah, they're going to let mobs of teenagers start fires, shoot guns, basically recreate the Congo in an underpass in North Carolina. And if you film it, you're the bad guy. You're the one that is causing the problem. You're the one that's causing the outrage because, you know, if this stuff just went on and they were able to bury it, then nobody would be angry at them. So it's your fault people are angry at them. This is genuine footage from one of the teen takeover nights. It's one of the craziest things ever. It just happens repeatedly. This is what I mean when I was like, it's like a rave scene from The Matrix or a scene from Heart of Darkness. And he's traveling down the Congo and just hearing drums in the deep, drums in the distance, signal fires as the hordes of savages, you know, dance and eat each other. That's what we're descending into. It's great. It's wonderful. If only those damn social media companies wouldn't make people aware of it, then this wouldn't be an issue. I have an idea. Water cannons. Here's an idea. Giant cannons of water on top of tanks. How about that? I think that would work. We got to do something. So far, we're doing absolutely nothing. And it devolves to things like this. Matt Van Swole says, let me get this straight. If I attempt to break into a federal facility and started shoving federal agents, I'd go to jail immediately. But when a Democrat does it, they claim America is an authoritarian state. Can somebody explain this to me? I believe we have this this video clip 9 here. ICE agents beat a protester with batons against a truck in the street outside of Delaney Hall. So just this is going on. This is still continuing, which should really piss you off because ICE gave up on the deportations. ICE stopped doing the raids. ICE capitulated to the demands of the psychotic socialist leftist agitators, gave them everything they wanted, and they're still rioting and they're still attacking police officers. You know what the answer to the question is? You know what the new solution is? Ignore these people and crush them because they're destroying our country and preventing us from taking the necessary steps to reclaiming our homeland. These people are the enemy. We are at war. They are the enemy army. They are on our streets. They are attacking with impunity. What the hell are we doing here? Let's go to clip number 9 now. This is, again, God only knows. I think this is New Jersey. I assume this is the New Jersey ICE facility being attacked, just like the ones in LA were, just like the ones in Minnesota were, just like they all are. Even if you back down, even if you capitulate, even if you promise to only get the most violent people, only get them out of jail when they're already convicted for a crime, they don't care. They want the illegal immigrants here. They want to take over the country. Again, for the love of God, can we stop listening to them? Can you just look at what they do? They don't care about mistreatment of illegal immigrants. They don't care about, oh, innocent families getting taken away. They don't want the violent criminals taken away. They don't want the murderers and the rapists taken away. They want them here. They want all of them here. They want open borders. They want to swamp the country. They want to destroy the United States and eradicate white people and take it over so it can be a giant multicultural slum like Brazil or South Africa, so it can descend slowly but surely into misery, chaos, and power outages for the next 50 years while demanding that everybody, you know, give them reparations despite the fact that they took the country over fully 30 years ago and it's been a precipitous decline into chaos and misery ever since. This is the future they want. They're getting it. We have to fight back. You can't talk about it. You can't debate them. You can't reason with them. You can't capitulate to them. You have to crush them. That was the thing that we wanted Donald Trump to do. That's what we elected him to do, and that's what he promised he would do. He has betrayed us. He has surrendered to these people, and they have seen it as a green light to demand 100 times more. And guess what? They're probably going to get it as well, because the people surrounding Donald Trump right now are these people. The John Paulsons, the Miriam Adelsons, they love what's going on at the ICE facility. They are in favor of the Zohra Mamdanis and the Hassan Pikers. They're their you know, biggest supporters at the end of the day. And Trump is a servant to these people. It's not that confusing. Well, let's go to clip number 9 here. This is the ICE facility in New Jersey yesterday. So I don't know about you. To me, it looks kind of worse than anything we saw on January 6th. Hey, do you remember on January 6th when a bunch of peaceful protesters were attacked by Capitol Police firing non-lethal ammunition into their heads from the balconies, forcing them forward into the line of police, causing the chaos that snowballed into the raid on the Capitol, which resulted in 0 deaths of any officers, but 5 deaths of the protesters? Do you remember when the Capitol Police set upon an unarmed crowd and murdered 5 of them? And then immediately after, there were these sedition hunters where millions of dollars in the entire force of the FBI were turned towards identifying every single plumber from Nebraska that happened to wander through the Capitol high-fiving police on the way through. Hey, remember what the government is capable of doing when it sees its interests under threat? Why aren't they doing it here? Why aren't they hunting down every single one of these people and charging them with terrorism and sending them to jail for 20 years? Because they want it, because they like it, because these people are on the side of the tyrants. They are the useful idiots. They are the deconstructionists paving the way for the communist takeover, and the people in power in our country, yes, even the Republican ones, are on their side. It's not that complicated, folks. It really is not that complicated. And the scam, the number of scams, the level of scams, the variety of scams that are tearing apart our country is truly inexpressible. It's unbelievable. Let's go to clip number 22 here. This is Muckraker at Real Muckraker, friend of the show. We should actually get him on to talk about this. He exposed a huge food stamp fraud ring where migrants buy products with taxpayer funds and send it to the Dominican Republic so it can be sold for profit. Let's go now to Muckraker. Follow them on X at Real Muckraker. Clip 22.
So right now we're in one of many stores in the Dominican Republic that are stocked with food, paid for in the United States with food stamps, and sent here on a boat in a blue barrel, offloaded, and then put in these little bodega stores and sold here. And you can see all this food behind me. You can see, for example, this comes from Tops. This comes from Tops here, traditional pasta sauce. Sold for 350 Dominican pesos. We got ground pork, and this goes for 225 pesos. So this is what's going on. People who have family in the United States load up these blue barrels with food that they pay for with food stamps. They ship it here to their family members in the Dominican Republic, and the family members here sell it at a profit or use it themselves, and it's all being paid for by you, the American taxpayer.
We went to another store in Santo Domingo that was being run out of a woman's home. The owner explained to us how she gets her inventory from charities in the United States.
Okay, so toda la comida aquí es de las iglesias en Estados Unidos.
De la iglesia, sí. De la defensa en la iglesia, sí. Con un carrito yo la busco.
Usted cuando va a las despensas allá, las iglesias donde dan la comida y todo eso, le hacen enseñar ID o algo así o no?
Sí.
¿Y cuál ID enseña usted?
Yo enseño de dominicano.
¿De acá?
Sí, de aquí.
So she's now saying...
Yo no llevo mi pasaporte, yo llevo el dominicano, la cédula mía, el ID mío de aquí.
¿En un ID dominicano?
De aquí, sí.
¿Suficiente?
Sí.
¿Es cédula?
Sí, sí.
Nada preguntas con las iglesias,
no preguntan
sobre la ID.
No preguntan nada. Con ese me piden la dirección en que yo estoy viviendo. Estoy alojada y yo le daba la dirección de mamá y el número de teléfono de mi madre.
¿Qué tú tienes los nombres de las organizaciones?
Yo tengo uno que le dicen el ALMI. El ALMI por la 138, por ahí, por la Lennon. Y hay otro que le dicen el Kennedy, que queda en la 135. La iglesia, hay una que le dicen el Buen Pastor. O hay otra iglesia también que queda en la 129, al lado donde vivía mamá.
¿La iglesia católica?
Sí, sí, católica. Esa que yo iba a buscar comida.
¿Cómo se dice aquí?
Codito.
Corito. So we have elbows here. Ronzoni. What else have we got? There's a ton of Campbell's chicken noodle soup.
Sopa.
You got a bunch of these here. 100 pesos. So this cost 100 pesos. So that's about $1.50. So here you have, ¿cómo se dice arroz?
Sí.
Mucho arroz.
40 libras.
You got oats. You got cornmeal. You got lentils. So in this case, what's going on is
so that's Anthony Rubin, great independent journalist. Just a short collection of his coverage of what's happening with the Dominican Republic as they, yeah, literally are using taxpayer money to fund to buy food and send it. But they do that here too. We've seen videos where, you know, Indian store owners will go into grocery stores or buying a cart full of milk. There's like, you know, 120 gallons of milk in their cart. They're paying with food stamps. They then go and, you know, mark those up and sell them, basically getting their supply for their corner stores absolutely free. So it's no wonder that with all of this going on, the economy is basically in free fall. And of course, it's affecting the Republicans most, as it should, as they deserve it. Republicans stare down inflation abyss with midterms fast approaching. Republicans have said for months that inflation is former President Joe Biden's problem. Now they're staring down the barrel of an inflation crisis of their own making, and the blame game is just getting started. Trump and congressional Republicans swept into power in 2024 by promising to defeat inflation that dogged Biden's presidency. But then we went off and got into war in Iran for some reason, for some inexplicable reason, because Israel demanded that we do it, and we apparently are all subject to their blackmail and threats. Americans about to pay even more at the grocery store. This is from finance.yahoo.com. As Americans confront a huge surge of prices at the pump, another inflation wave is headed for the grocery store. A combination of factors, including bad weather. Ah, it's that global warming. Dang it. It's global warming again. It's global warming and Putin once again. They're the reason that your food is too expensive. Tariffs and a dwindling cattle herd. Oh, the cattle herd's just dwindling. You know, this is, again, one of these things. It's these types of words, this type of phrasing that you got to watch out for. What do I always say? To be a conspiracy theorist, you have to understand things don't just happen. So when things are phrased as if they're just happening, you should be suspicious and you should be wondering what's really causing that. The cattle herds aren't just dwindling. It's not just happening. The cattle didn't just decide to stop having sex one day and having children. They're being deliberately closed down. They're being crushed under the weight of regulations, all predicated on climate change, which they have now abandoned because they found a better way to screw you over and enslave you through data centers and AI collection and surveillance, which ironically requires a huge amount of energy production. So climate change is passe. They don't really care about that so much anymore. But they are killing the cow herds because it's not about saving the planet at the end of the day. It's about making you a weak and pathetic cuck by depriving you of protein and meat. H-1B visa surge displaces American tech workers as foreign-born talent dominates Silicon Valley. I could spend an entire show on this story alone and show video after video of Indian people in America explaining that this is exactly what they're doing and just admitting, like, yeah, once one of us gets into a position of power, we benefit all the rest of us. I mean, they're actually making it a matter of, like, national policy at this point, with the Indian government explaining that this is exactly what they're doing. This is a video. Software engineer in Dallas makes $120,000 per year through contract work. He has no degree, no certificate. He took a 3-month online boot camp and he got his job by a reference from a compatriot that works in finance. Straight from the source. He's not highly skilled, not highly educated, speaks poor English, and got his job from nepotism. And that's who's replacing you. Again, it goes on and on. And just remember that it is part and parcel with Trump's, you know, wider alliances, the people that he's friends with and surrounded by, like John Paulson. John Paulson was one of the main contributors to Thomas Massie's opposition. He was one of the three, you know, Israeli billionaires that contributed tens of millions of dollars to oust Thomas Massie from office. One of Trump's longtime donors is shutting down an Ohio manufacturing plant and moving operations to China. Billionaire John Paulson, who raised over $50 million for Trump's 2024 campaign, plans to offshore Conn Selmer, the largest U.S. maker of brass and orchestra instruments. Wasn't that nice? We actually made something. We actually still make something. And they're beautiful brass instruments that, you know, kids take and join marching band or, you know, create music. But, you know, it'd be, whatever, 50 cents cheaper to do it in China. Of course, it will destroy the communities that depend on these manufacturing plants. But what does John Paulson care about that? He does have American producers closing American factories and offshoring. We need to protect American jobs and protect American manufacturing, Paulson said just last year. Yeah, you don't need to listen to what they say. Look at what they do. They don't care. We came in with a full proposal, fully prepared to bargain, and they started off with a presentation of telling us how bad we were doing, said UAE Local 2359 president and plant worker Robert Hines, to go publicly on CNN to support the Trump administration's positive views on tariffs and all that stuff, and then turn around and say you want to send the workers right over to China. It's a slap in our face. Paulson raised $50.5 million for Trump during his 2024 campaign, and like Trump, he's pushed pro-domestic worker rhetoric while leaving those same workers out to dry, because he's not America first. He never was. And we just are, you know, an economic zone to exploit for him. And he's doing it effectively by pretending to do the opposite. It's very simple. It's just evil. And of course, it's giving all of the impetus and all of the energy to the UAW union, which, of course, as we know, is already planning right now to be at the center of a giant nationwide shutdown of the entire nation's economy on May Day 2028. And how do you get people to go along with some sort of communistic revolution? You make their lives miserable. You destroy the contentedness of your workmen. You make them discontented. You make them angry. You make them furious at the way they're being treated. You abuse them, and then you give them the outlet, which is an overthrow of the government and a revolution, which will solve nothing and, in fact, turn power into the hands of people like John Paulson. Stay with us. Huge guest on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, folks. Second hour of the Alex Jones Show is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I will be joined very shortly by Frank Wright. He went absolutely viral this weekend for this incredible extemporaneous talk, answering questions from an interviewer at a rally in the UK. We're going to ask him about that and about his experience, and also about what he's actually a real expert in, which is surrogacy, which he's been on our platform before to discuss. But in case you hadn't seen it, the whole video is like 15 minutes long. You got to go watch the whole thing. We'll show you a few minutes here and then talk with Mr. Wright when we get back on the other side. Here's Frank Wright answering questions about the state of the UK. Let's watch.
So what has persuaded you to come out today?
Well, we've driven up, my son and I, from Newbury, because obviously we can see the state of the nation and there's a national emergency and we need to obviously think about the future. What kind of country are we going to have for our children? Or are we going to have a nation at all? Now, I'd rather live in a nation and not a market, not a borderless international supermarket browsed by mutually hostile strangers, not something that reduces us all to bargain hunters. We need to save the nation, and I think that Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain is the only credible vehicle to do that.
What was it that made you come over? What were the issues that pulled you to Restore, and what was the moment?
Well, you can see that there's, obviously, there's the bankruptcy of the general liberal idea. There's the fact that you get a sense that the Western idea and the ideas we've had since the Second World War are winding down themselves, and at the same time, you can't escape the fact that we appear to be morally as well as financially bankrupt across the West, across Europe and in Britain, that the whole system is in a form of crisis. If you like, what we used to call normal life has been replaced by a permanent state of emergency in terms of our social incohesion, in terms of demographic change, in terms of the fact that there appear to be no realistic solutions offered, and whoever you vote for, the same mad policies get continued throughout your life, and that's what I've seen the last 30 years, and if it goes on, we're finished.
So what does finished look like?
What does finished look like? Finished looks like an economic collapse. Finished looks like spending all your money on foreign wars when nothing works in the country. Finished looks like you can't get a job for being competent. There's no sanity even in recruitment. We have a competency crisis because for increasingly ideological and insane reasons, employment opportunities, even training opportunities, are restricted. There's one news story after another about why, for political reasons, we're doing mad things that bankrupt the country, that basically park people's careers, that exclude talented people of genuine principle from any area of influence whatsoever. And taken collectively, this is the politics and economics of national suicide. So it has to stop. And there's increasingly a sense, not just in Britain, but throughout the West, that something has to change. And I think that's only going to build as we begin to see the devastating consequences of the latest round of reckless warmongering in the Middle East, which we should never have been involved in, but we're all going to have to live with those consequences. And from this summer on, we're going to see how bitter they are. And it's only going to get worse unless we change the system. And there's no real change that's offered by the parties of the forced consensus. That was the liberal establishment after the Second World War, and it doesn't work anymore, and it hasn't produced the utopia it's promised. It's produced a sort of hell on earth. from which there seems to be no way out. But there is. There are people of genuine principle and genuine talent in this country. And the reason why so many people despair of that is because I think they've been systematically excluded from positions of power, influence and professional advantage for ideological reasons that has bankrupted the country. But we have enormous human capital here. We're just not permitted to release it, because if you don't have the correct views, you don't get the job, you don't get any promotion. In fact, you might be harassed off social media and find yourself debanked, or at least your career is stymied. So what we need is a realistic economy, some return of human dignity to everyone.
Absolutely brilliantly said by my guest, Frank Wright. We'll be back in 90 seconds to talk to him about all of this and more. And I'm just like writing down phrases that he used, collective suicide. I mean, he's just dead on about everything, and we'll expand on all of it. Stay with us, folks. It's the Alex Jones Show, alexjoneslive.com. And, of course, support us at thealexjonesstore.com. Right now it's buy one, get one on T3 iodine and the methylene blue tincture. And, of course, you support us and help us to continue our mission, which is to spread knowledge and awakening to the reality of how our world is constructed and what is being done to us. And on that note, my guest is Frank Wright. You just saw the video that went totally viral over the weekend. Frank Wright is a fearless journalist and commentator dedicated to reporting on the most critical issues facing Western civilization. A regular contributor to LifeSite News, his work focuses on defense of life, family, and faith, exposing the powerful forces of cultural decay and globalism that threaten these foundational pillars. Through his widely read Substack, frankwriter.com, and that's Frank, WRIGHTER.com, Frank provides in-depth analysis and cuts through the noise of the mainstream media, championing traditional Christian values, national sovereignty, and the preservation of our heritage, offering a clear-eyed perspective on the political and social battles of our time. Follow him on X at Frank Wrighter. Again, that's W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R. He's a vital voice for those seeking truth without apology. Mr. Wright, thank you so much for coming on again.
Well, thank you for having me, Harrison. It's very gracious of you.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I told the story yesterday, but I saw the video of you that we just played and I was blown away by it. And I had a friend reach out and say, you know, this man's name is Frank Wright. So I reached out to you and you said, you know, I've been on your show before. And it suddenly clicked. Right. You'd been in our studio. We talked about surrogacy. It was a brilliant appearance back then. But I had no idea you had such a wide breadth of expertise as on display in that discussion. So my apologies for not recognizing you. You're out of the element, I guess, out there in the real world. But you know, what was it? Was this a set? Did you know what you were going to say? Was this all just off the cuff? I mean, how did this video happen? And what do you think it was that made it go so viral?
Well, I'd first like to point out that I did say that I would memory shame you for having forgotten me. So this is the reason why I'm wearing this hat indoors in my daughter's bedroom, where it's very hot. And that's why I'm looking so unacceptably pink.
So I can recognize you.
My desultory appearance. But look, some people have actually said, I've tried to reply to all the comments. I think it's just polite to try and do so. I've been up till 4 a.m. trying to do that, but I'll try and get round to it. Thank you, everybody. I think the reason why it resonated with so many people is because you very seldom hear any ordinary person speaking sanity about the insane system. And that's because the way we are ruled systematically excludes those voices. So it's tremendous relief. I didn't really speak for me. I think I spoke for a lot of us. Did I prepare it? No. I was prepared to go around knocking on doors, trying to talk to people about Restore Britain, because Restore Britain is in fact a party that is dedicated to clearing out the entire rotten establishment. It's an extraordinary political project to save the nation. And so that's why I believed in it. Now, some people have said they suspected that I was AI. I've seen a comment suggesting that I'm AI. I can assure you I am not AI. In fact, I can assure you that I am, in fact, myself and a real person. As you can see from my determinedly non-American teeth, I think it's an act of treason for any Englishman to adopt those universally standardized perfect teeth, and I shall never do so. If I was AI, I'd have that, wouldn't I, for a start? So, no, it wasn't prepared, and that giant simply ambushed me. And the reason why I can go on about it so much is because I've been writing for a number of years on the political technique of the 20th century, which is, if you like, the rule by media. And it explains why we have these successive policies of pantomime elections where the same mad ideas continue and our life continues to get worse. And you can't seemingly do anything about it. I think we're in a really serious crisis now. I think it's a terminal crisis of that system. And that gives us a tremendous opportunity to change it. once and for all.
Well, and people like you, you know, putting the argument in the way that you did, I think that's the way that we move forward, because it does seem like we have an inability to confront this stuff in the way that you did, forcefully, forthrightly. It's hard to do that without crossing some invisible line and saying something that's offensive to somebody. Do you take that into account? And like, as somebody in Britain who, I mean, your fellow, you know, people in the United Kingdom, you're getting thrown in jail for 2 years for, you know, accidentally publishing the wrong headline on Facebook. How do you express yourself, you know, with fully while you have this in the back of your mind? I mean, how do you contend with that reality, and how do you fight back against this society when they do have these speech controls that dictate how you're supposed to express yourself?
Well, the reason why the liberal system does this is because the awful reality that it's created is so terrible that the only thing they can do is criminalize the mention of it. Yep. So if you complain about the terrible effects that their policies have caused, you complain about they've ruined your life, they criminalize that mention and they try and intimidate you into simple compliance as everything gets worse and you pay higher and higher taxes to fund the destruction of your entire way of life and indeed the replacement of your people in your own homeland, the abolition of your history, your tradition, your culture, to produce this kind of borderless international nowhere land or like this kind of global standard economy. And it really is just an economic model that consumes and destroys everything as it replaces everything with itself. So that's the reason why you have this, is because if they admit that they've made these terrible mistakes and that they're responsible for them, they're finished. Well, I think they're finished anyway, because it isn't actually extremists such as myself, if you're sane and you object sanely and you ask for sanity in politics and society, they call you an extremist, shows you how mad they are. Right. But it's not extremists like me who are making this case. It's the reality that we all have to inhabit. And whether you like me personally or not, or you agree with me or not, we can all agree that everything's getting worse and there is no end in sight provided by the forced political consensus. Because basically, the political and economic system that we've had all my life is kind of a weapon of mass destruction that destroys everything. And that's plainly obvious now. And we can't go on like this. So I think what's happened is by basically policing speech to the point where anyone who makes any reasonable and humane objections to this awful system is demonized as a criminal and even locked up, what you've done here is you've created an enormous counter-elite of millions and millions of not just disaffected, but actually very talented and intelligent and capable people. And we can all agree that this system isn't working for us. It's working for them.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Although, you know, the question is it a mistake, right? You know, you say, well, they don't want you. You're sort of pointing out that, you know, these policies have these negative outcomes. Well, to me, it's obvious that it's because they want the negative outcomes. If they actually were concerned about the state of and well-being of the people, they wouldn't criminalize complaints. They would address them, right? So, you know, when you say collective suicide, is it suicide or is it murder? And are these policies, you know, accidentally having these negative outcomes that they then go on to cover up? Right, because it does all seem obvious, which is what makes us seem insane, is it's like, wait, the policies harm us, and then they silence you from saying that so they can continue the policy? They're trying to harm you. It really is obvious, and that's what makes you feel insane, is that nobody else seems to recognize it, and it's like, what the heck is wrong with everybody? So is it suicide or is it murder?
If you attach consequences to people's lives for naming reality, if you discuss basic facts about this awful reality, you know that there's a risk that you're going to be punished, that your career is going to be ruined, that they're going to come after you in some way. And so that's a form of compliance. This is one of the reasons why you very seldom hear anyone talk about the free world anymore, because we don't live in it anymore, do we? Now, to speak to the issue that you said, I often describe the liberal political economy as the politics of national suicide, which it is. That's what it's producing in practice. It's destroying our nations, our history, our people, our religion, our culture, our morality. It's the meaning of our lives. It's destroying everything. Why is it doing this? Of course, it's intentional. Now, I've written a book, inevitably, which I haven't yet published because I've got little children, and also I'm not the best at managing my little life. But basically, it's a history of the 20th century, and it shows you the political history of the 20th century, called A Brief History of Liberal Democracy. The liberal system was founded by people who were internationalists. That's what they called themselves at the time. They were financiers, bankers, technocrats, propagandists like Walter Lippmann and so on, and J.P. Morgan and John Dewey. And all this stuff, if you talk about it, people say, oh, no, that's a conspiracy theory. This stuff's in the congressional record.
Right.
They presented their project of a globally standard system into which they would fold all the nations by inventing a new politics that would be standard across the world, liberal democracy. And they had a debt-based system that was invented in the Federal Reserve to finance it. And that was the idea. And they had the Council on Foreign Relations as the kind of international management structure of this system. These the effects that you're seeing that we inhabit, everything from the mad social revolutions that drive people into these mutually antagonistic factions that dissolve society and basically make people kind of unilaterally declare war on civilization for some identitarian reason or other, they're not accidental. That's regime change at home. Just as regime change takes place abroad, these things are also industries, but they serve, if you like, the common purpose of dissolving nations into a globally standard international system ruled by the elite. And that's what it is. We call it globalism nowadays. And again, you know, because if you get called a conspiracy theorist for this, it's because you're basically naming an unpleasant and revealing fact about how you are actually ruled. And once people find out how they are ruled, they're ruled by the mass production of meaning through the consumer culture that we inhabit. It's everywhere. Practically everything you see in your consumer life, in your workplace, on your way to work, on the internet, is also an embedded form of ideological messaging for this system to tell you that it and only its beliefs are real and true, and all the other ones are false or insane or mad. Or in fact, it simply just doesn't tell you about them at all. It erases our historical memory, makes us live in this permanent hot moment present where we're saturated with trash in the information sphere. It's completely confusing and debilitating, and it's degenerating our lives and depriving them of meaning and dignity. And in fact, that's the problem for them. When you notice that that's the case, and that's how you're ruled, if you like, the rule by media, then you realize that you've been sold an advert for a product that doesn't exist. Mm. We're not being delivered into a utopia. They're depriving us of the value of our lives and replacing it with price, which when you examine it, is simply the access or not to debt, depending on the terms and conditions of your increasingly digitalized existence.
Whoa, okay, that got really deep. I had questions to ask you, and then that last part sort of threw me for a loop. But you're exactly right, because it's about the manufacturing of consent, right? This false consensus, the constantly hammering in of the same point over and over until everybody believes that it is the consensus and they go along with it. And it's a hijacking of our – it is like when I see it, it's like they're tinkering in your brain. They're hijacking your chemical production to make you fearful, to put you in this – you know, you said in the original video that we played in the first 5 minutes, the permanent state of emergency. And that's not just, you know, a legal emergency, you know, these legal abilities that they have, but in the minds of the people, in the hearts of the people, constant anxiety, constant worry, constant stress, just sort of grinding us down forever, and it allows them to get away with just about anything. Expand a little bit more on this idea of – rule by consensus, rule by the media, because that really is what democracy devolves down to at the end of the day. Whoever sort of has control of the media and can tell the best story can drive votes wherever they want. They can hide real trends and patterns that are happening while manufacturing trends and patterns to cause outrage and get movement. Talk a little bit more about the role of media in the way that they shape the perception and therefore the policies of the entire society.
Well, very well. I mean, if you want to understand the state we're in today and why it's so mad and why it seems inescapable and why the descriptions you're offered of reality don't match it, well, what you want to do is try to understand the word technique. And technique is the refinement of the process of producing a standard result. Now, look at it as a political technique. In about 1863, a man called Matthew Arnold wrote a book called Culture and Anarchy. And he said, in an increasingly liberalizing and democratized world, we're going to need a unifying culture to prevent that from descending into anarchy. And he said that that could be provided by a cultural and ruling elite. And I think he imagined kind of classical music and poetry in that. Instead, you've got Taylor Swift and televised sports.
Right.
But if you think about that idea, when you come to the 20th century, you meet people like Walter Lippmann, the author of Public Relations, who actually helped to found the Council on Foreign Relations with John Dewey and so on, and J.P. Morgan. And he said that what we can do to create a system of ruling these new populations into compliance is we can create what he called a pseudo-environment in the mind. And that was the creation, he said, the deliberate creation of public opinion. In his own words, he said, the liberty of liberal democracy is a myth. We're going to teach people what they're going to believe about reality. We're going to project a picture into their heads and call it reality. And that's what he said was the nature of public relations or propaganda. And so that's what they do. They create these images and broadcast them into your minds. And they make sure that they can manipulate that power. And that's the power that they have. Now, there's a Frenchman called Gérard Collomb, who wrote a book called Propaganda. It's just available in French right now, I'm afraid. I mean, he's a lefty and so on, a bit of a liberal. But his book is a masterpiece of the summary of the political technique of the 20th century. And he said that what the liberal democracies did was they attempted to replace the baton of the policeman with mass media. And so this is where I came up with this idea that, you know, if you like, the decline of our civilization and our human dignity has taken place at the rate of the development of the technology of mass communication, from the paper and cinema age through, if you like, the television age. From the paper and cinema age through the radio age, then to the television age, and then to the phone age. You can see that the rate of that development of technology has effectively dictated the refinement of the technique by which they can create this fantasy world in your head and make you believe in that and manipulate that through entertainment and commentary and dominating the media and the news, not just the news, but your education and everything is folded into this technique, a political technique of creating belief in the system. That's what it does. I call that process cultural production, because if you want to get a bit deeper into it, there's a congressional statement, a record by, by George F. Kennan, the great post-war American diplomat, 1948, called On the Inauguration of Organized Political Warfare. And if you check the Library of Congress, it's in there. And he said, to do this, we are going to have to mobilize all forms of our mass communication culture as a form of propaganda for our system. And they did. And they went on, the CIA, which had been created a year before, went on to basically finance the creation of the Museum of Modern Art, people like Jackson Pollock and Mark Rothko, and even sponsor international intellectuals like Sir Isaiah Berlin and the art critic Clement Greenberg, and things like music and culture and so on. And so you saw the mobilization of political power moving through the mass culture, the increasing mass communications culture of the mid to late 20th century, to mobilize everything as a form of propaganda. And that's why it's so shocking for people to discover that they live in the most propagandized system in human history, because the fact that it's everywhere makes it invisible. But once you see it, as they say on the internet, cannot unsee. So basically what I'm saying is, once you discover the trick by which you're ruled, it doesn't work anymore. And people are, not because they're boring, sad, lifeless individuals like me who waste their time on books, but because they can see simply that the advertisements, if you like, that they're being given for this so-called perfect system do not match, in fact, contradict the increasingly awful reality that they have to inhabit. And that's why things are going to change. And that's why I think we're going to win.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because right now you look around. I mean, I could play video. I've got probably 30 videos today. Every country in Europe, obviously it's this Muslim holiday now. So just soccer fields from Ireland to France to Netherlands, and it looks like total domination. It's very black pilling. So I'm glad to hear you're white pilled on all of this, and you see a light at the end of the tunnel. But you know, it's the shocking or confusing thing to me is people seem to genuinely respond to calls for, you know, free speech, right? Or democracy, freedom. You know, when they talk about Russia and they say, oh, this horrible tyrant, he's such a, you know, brutal authoritarian, we have to fight him for that reason. People seem to genuinely respond to that. They really hate this idea. But then you go, well, look, the UK has imprisoned 30 times more people for speech crimes. You're the tyrants. And yet that same outrage doesn't apply to the UK. That's what I get confused at. It's like, okay, you're appropriately outraged when you think it's Russia doing it. Where is that same outrage when it's UK doing it? What explains that dichotomy?
Well, I think that's due to the fact that we are effectively ruled by the media, and you don't see the millions and millions of people who are, in fact, incensed by the way that they've been misruled into a permanent state of emergency, and they have. You just simply don't see it because you're shut out of the media. And as well, most people are in debt. Most people are struggling just to stay afloat. Most British people have no realistic chance of any kind of economic prosperity or aspiration whatsoever. So speaking out carries a considerable risk, where you can be locked up for stickers or protesting against the awful crimes that result from the mass migration waves that successive governments have permissioned into our country that's ruining our lives. So there are if you attach significant risks to complaining about this reality, that's a form of control and coercion, and it's effective. And combined with that, anyone who is sane and sanely and humanely objects, morally objects to this, because I do that. In fact, I go further and say, as John Gray does, the greatest student and critic of the liberal idea who's ever lived, he was the former professor of European thought at LSE. And also, incidentally, he's a northern dwarf like me as well. So, you know, good marks to him. So John Gray says the liberal system is illegitimate. That's to say it does not have a right to rule. And why is that? Because it doesn't discharge the duties of the state. The state has duties. The state has duties to basically provide security and prosperity and some form of meaning to your life through its political economy. And it's abandoned its duties. And all it ever does is talk about increasingly insane rights that basically encourage you to go deranged and scream and demand more advantage for yourself on the basis of your own voluntary insanity. So you have rights without duties. That's the political economy. And in our foreign policy, there's absolutely no balance at all. So there's an absence of balance. There's no sense of obligation to anyone else. No one in power ever faces any consequences for the awful things they've done. And as I said, if you speak out against them, then they'll punish you. And life is hard enough for most people. So they're basically prudent in not doing that. But that moment is changing. The cost of staying quiet now is that we'll be finished as a people. We'll lose everything. So I don't think that technique's going to work anymore.
Yeah, and that's, of course, that's the classic trade-off of tyranny is, hey, you know, I'm going to oppress you, but in return, you're going to be safe. I'm going to deal with our enemies, real or imagined. There's some sort of trade-off. And that's sort of the strange part is they are subjecting everybody to tyranny, but they aren't even offering the ostensible benefits of tyranny, which would be safety in your homeland. It's completely absurd. And you know, I've got a lot of stories. When we get back on the other side, we're going to go to a short commercial break here. But then when we get back on the other side, we're going to talk about like just how real what you're describing is, including Dries van Langenhoven, I think is how you pronounce his name, who, of course, was just sentenced by a Belgian court who acknowledged that what he said was true, but said that the facts he presented were presented in a way that could cause outrage. So, again, it's not speculative. This isn't theoretical or metaphysical in any way. It's very real. It's very tangible. They will literally throw you in jail for telling the truth because you're exposing the bankruptcy, the moral bankruptcy of the policies that are being pursued by Europe. And it's happening in America as well. And that's the other thing that we should touch on is the fact that this isn't just happening in Europe, even though y'all are getting perhaps the you know, biggest amount of this attack in the UK and Ireland especially. But it's happening in America too, where this insanity is causing us to go insane. It's causing the sane people to go insane because everybody else seems insane around us. It's like this insane feedback loop that only creates more insanity. Frank Wright is my guest. Find him on his Substack at frankwriter.com. That's W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R, frankwriter.com. We'll be right back with more. Joined today by Frank Wright. Find his Substack at frankwriter.com, on X at Frank Wright as well. And as you can see, the man has a very clear grasp on what the heck's going wrong in the world today. I want to ask you, how do we get it right? How do we fix this? What is the white pill that you see, the light at the end of the tunnel? Before that, this is the story I referenced at the end of the last segment here. Telling the truth is quite literally a crime in the EU now. A Belgian court has ruled that even, quote unquote, factually correct statements can constitute criminal hate speech if used to incite hatred. They say van Langenhoven, who's this activist from Belgium, is not charged with spreading false information. He's charged with presenting facts in a way that incites hatred against persons on the grounds one or more of the protected criteria of the anti-racism laws. I mean, this is Orwelling into the extreme. They literally admit, yes, what you said was true, but you're not allowed to say it. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this, Frank.
Well, what you must point out here is that noticing reality is a crime. What that man did What Dries did is that he noticed reality. What they said was, he said what he said was true, but the fact that he told the truth could upset a lot of people because the truth is terrible. And the reason why it's a crime and he must be demonized and imprisoned is because it's the political system that has created that reality and it has made those awful truths something that you have no alternative but to endure. So either you punish Dries or you admit, sorry, we've made your life a living hell. And so that's why sane people who simply notice the awful reality we have to live in, who have the courage to notice it out loud, are demonized and criminalized. Similar thing happened to a man in Britain called Sam Melia. And he went to prison and they prevented his children from visiting him in prison, which is evil, because he'd put up stickers, which the court said were both true and legal. But because they contained messages that were critical of the mad liberal policies of destroying our nation with open borders, he had to go to prison. So, yes, you do go to prison. I may be picked off by the system. I personally don't care. I have to do this for the sake of our people, my children, our nation, and our Christian civilization generally, because this system is evil. And we have to say it's got to stop now. Now, obviously, doing that is inspirational to people, but it isn't just people like me who are going to make this change. Like I said, the reality these mad people have created through their locked discourse of their forced consensus and their false elections for this rule by media system that never offers any serious change and never listens to the concerns or misery of ordinary people that it's caused. This system is finished, and that's because everybody's suffering except the very small elite that profits from it. And if you like, a great number of people who belong to, if you like, a dependent class of apparatchiks whose livelihoods in the lanyard class depend on administering the insane and mad policies that increasingly police every area of your life. This is completely unsustainable. But to speak to the case of Dries once again, if you can financially support any people like him, who are picked off by the mad liberals for having the gall to point out how terrible their policies are and how they're ruining our lives, please support them financially if you can. Please spread their message. Don't let them rot in silence.
It's actually the only way to combat this is to show the powers that be that if they go after somebody, we're going to make them a millionaire and make them that much more popular. It's the only incentive they would have to not do this is crap. It keeps backfiring on us. So I completely agree. You've got to support people like Dries Vanderlegenhoven. I'm sorry. I'm trying to pronounce it.
Dries Vanderlegenhoven.
There you go. Thank you very much. I needed the European accent. I'm just a dumb American over here doing my best. But seriously, he is a real hero and he is going to jail and has been just run over the coals for speaking the truth and trying to defend European people.
Sorry to interrupt you, but please. I wanted to give you a note of optimism again. Well, in fact, I'm not an optimist. I'm a realist. Realistically, right, you can see if you look at this from the point of view of political technique, these techniques are not working. Everything the dissolving liberal system is doing to try and preserve itself is actually an act of self-harm. The more that they lock sane people up and demonize them for complaining about the conditions that their entire population finds miserable, the less people believe in them, the more they're hated. Everything they do to hang on to power makes them more resented and more nakedly the enemy of the people. Right? The government is against its people. That's basically the case. That's why it's illegitimate. That means it has no legal right to rule you. If you want to get into that, that's it. It's broken its contract, if you like, with the people. This isn't a sovereign power. It's a despotism. You're basically ruled by what increasingly resembles a crime syndicate. Because let's face it, in the deprivation of dignity, meaning the ability to earn a living, real money, real jobs, everything in our lives has been subtracted by these people for their own benefit. That's a crime on a scale so vast there isn't even a name for it. It's basically the murder of our civilization and everything we hold dear in life. And that's what they've done. And they know it. And they know that increasing numbers of people that they've ruled into this desperate state, they know it as well. Because you can't avoid seeing it. Nothing works. All the policies are mad. They don't provide any solutions because their system and their corrupt political class, and it is corrupt, is the problem. And that in the attempt to contain it by persecuting and demonizing sane people who want a normal life, just a decent future for themselves and their children, that's the most reasonable request you can make of the state. If they punish you for this, it just shows you how insane they are. They're finished.
Well, so that's my question, is clearly you can't vote your way out of this. I mean, we've seen it over and over again in Germany and France, where, you know, the far right person will win, but lo and behold, the parliamentary system allows for the, you know, the center right and the left wing to come together and keep the far right out of office. Same type of thing happens in the UK. Obviously, all voted for Brexit, and that was on the basis of immigration. Obviously, immigration has only ramped up since then. Ireland has repeatedly voted not to allow more migrants. They're getting more migrants anyway. So how do you? I mean, what is the white pill? You can't vote your way out of this. Even if you do, they just ignore the results and do it anyway. What's the solution here?
Well, I'll tell you this, and I'll try and be brief in some reasonable degree of detail. There is a political solution offered by Rupert Lowe and his Restore Britain, because our project is not simply to get elected and enrich our friends and then produce some mad ideological nonsense because we've all had some ridiculous fantasy that we want to inflict on you. We want to save the nation. And to do that, what we want to do is to clear out the rotten, corrupt liberal establishment that has poisoned all our institutions. And we are going to do it. And we are going to reverse the years of unsolicited mass immigration that is effectively destroying our homeland and removing the future of our people as a whole. We will vanish if we don't do this. And we're not going to allow that to happen. Now, why is that going to happen? You can see in Germany that the Alternative für Deutschland has actually surged every time they've attempted to criminalise and demonise it, because fundamentally, what do they want? They want a balanced foreign policy, reasonable trade with Russia, an end to the forever wars that's bankrupting them, an end to the madness, an end to all that. And basically, how about this? A government for Germany that's for Germans. Wow. The French are doing the same thing with the Rassemblement National, and that's what we're going to be doing in Britain as well. How about a British government that acts in the British national interest of its own people? How about that for a change? How mad and extremist does that sound? Now, I've been told by people who know a lot more about this kind of thing that there's a threat from the Central European Bank and from the national banks of France and Germany to try and undermine those governments when they come to power, and they will, with a forced bond run. A very similar technique that was used to destroy the brief premiership of Liz Truss, who did actually try to institute a program to sweep away some of the rotten establishment, and they wouldn't have it, so they made the bond markets go mad and she was gone. Now, the reason why that's going to be very difficult to do is if you look at the price of 10-year bonds, especially in the United States, they're approaching that terrible mark of 5% that shows, oh dear, it's the current regime that is looking to be economically bankrupt. I think that bond run would probably come anyway. And if you don't understand what bonds are basically the confidence of other nations who buy your debt that you'll be able to make the payments, the interest payments, not pay your debts back. And the confidence in the United States and in the economies of the West to do that is rapidly declining. Why is that? We have bankrupted ourselves financially in a 30-year project of regime change to secure a global domination for this awful standardized dystopia that hasn't happened. It's failed. Now, you can see, if you look at it, because the reason why people find it difficult to conceive of technique and, if you like, the civilizational timescale is because we're all conditioned to be looking at our phones and catching up with the next and the last. Where basically our memories are kind of conditioned by tweets. So you don't really have any recollection of what it was like at the end of the Soviet Union and so on. But we weren't bankrupt then. And we had good functioning, sane societies that weren't mad, relatively speaking. But now we don't. I think it's at least a third of the US national debt that's come from the insane regime change operation and all its tremendous costs. J.D. Vance mentioned this in a speech in 2024 when he said towards a foreign policy for the American middle class. He said, realism and restraint. He said, why are we, as the moral Christian Republican Party, genociding historic Christians, including killing 1 million historic Christians in Iraq, and bankrupting the country and destroying the middle class because of all the debt that this has created? He pointed out that those wars, that regime change era, had financially and morally bankrupted the American political economy, and that it had manufactured belief in a series of mad wars that had ruined everything. And so this is the result of an attempt to dominate the world through military force and the sponsorship of social revolution at home. And we are living through the end of it now. If you can see it on that timescale, you can see where that ambitious project began. Read Thomas Hirschfeld's 1990 report, U.S. Grand Strategy for the 1990s and Beyond, where it suggested that the United States could have a peace dividend after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And there were three options for that. But option number four was only global power. And that's what, if you like, the military-industrial complex went for. And that's where all your money's gone. And all those wars, if you notice, they don't look like victories, do they? And they certainly haven't delivered a spreading of democracy and peace and stability. They have magnified the mass migration industry to the point where it has indeed turned Europe black, as Colonel Gaddafi warned it would in 2010, a year before they killed him in Operation Odyssey Dawn. So these disastrous policies have produced this, and everyone's beginning to realize that. And that's the reason why you're seeing these extreme authoritarian measures to try and prevent people from basically complaining about the awful situation you've been delivered in by these utopian, insane dreams to fold the world into a standard global system ruled by an effectively permanent elite. Yeah. Well, it turns out that they're probably not going to be so permanent anymore. And that's the reason why I would say you described me as white-pilled and so on. But if you look at the brief history of the last 30 years, you can see this is a grand experiment, a huge attempt for global domination that has demonstrably failed. It's the entire strategy's failed. There's an economic, diplomatic crisis. The populations that are ruled by mass belief in the West increasingly no longer believe in anything they're told by their governments. Right. So this is the moment. You can't stop this by locking people up, punishing them for naming the awful conditions they're forced to live in, for making basic, sane demands for a decent, natural, normal life. You can't save yourself like this. This is the end. We are living through something like the end of the Soviet Union, only this time it's our system. And why can I be so confident in saying that? Well, my study of the political technique of the 20th century shows that liberal democracy failed in the first 10 to 15 years after it was installed in the 1920s. The liberal system is the god that failed twice. We're living through its second and terminal failure right now.
Well, of course, you know, that failure is only in the realm, like if you're thinking about it from the perspective of a sane person like yourself, it has failed utterly. But if the point was to destroy Europe, then it has succeeded wildly. You know, a couple things that are rattling through my brain as you're talking about this whole interview, Aldous Huxley's quote where he says you can do everything with spears except sit on them, right? You want your subjects to love their slavery. That way they'll never rebel. And the fact that, like I started the show off today talking about the contented workman being the greatest barrier against revolution, right? If you treat your people well, if you give them meaning in their life, why would they want to create some sort of new revolutionary construct? And so clearly they're creating the strife and the chaos so that then they can take advantage of it. On the other hand, if you look around America today, things are bad, but people are still fairly comfortable. They're still, you know, able to spend most of their mental energy on football or whatever else because their lives are okay. You know, the sun is shining, their kids are going to school. It's almost like the greatest barrier to us fixing this problem is the comfort of people these days. It might be different in the UK, but there's this strange kind of dichotomy where things are getting worse, but I think the elite are incentivized to keep people comfortable so they don't get angry enough to actually do something about it. So they're trying to keep people comfortable while degrading their lives. It's a weird sort of balancing act they're playing. Do you understand what I'm saying? That
I think that part of the political technique is the creation of crisis and its monetization. You can see that. I mean, every crisis they create, these mad transgender crises, that's an industry. Mass migration's an industry as well. It's a partnership of government with NGOs and criminal gangs. You know, the war industry, it is an industry. Of course it is. You know, this washes money into the political class, yep, sponsors them and permissions action for more wars. We all know how that works. So you can see that, yeah. But the problem here, and I think especially with this war in Iran, and also to a great degree with the one that the NATO expansion caused in Russia, because that was certainly the cause of that one. Yeah. Again, a mad idea of dominating the world instead of making balanced, reasonable trade deals for prosperity and relative harmony. So what's happened here is that this elite has created a crisis from which it can't escape. This is the end of the unipolar moment that Charles Krauthammer talked about in around 2001. You know, America's no longer number one. It's one of a number. And that's going to come as a shock to a lot of Americans because they live in a bubble which has been created by the media to tell them these lies. But it's no longer true. It's not the 90s anymore in every respect. So, and also the economic consequences of shutting yourself off from reliable, cheap hydrocarbons and the world's fertilizer supply and many precursor chemicals as well, from effectively going around and setting all this on fire, there will be serious and mounting consequences to this that haven't really yet materialized beyond occasional rises in what you Americans call gas prices. But they will do. For example, next year's harvest is likely to be affected by the immediate shortage in fertilizer. Look at the state of American farming for that. Price of it's gone through the roof. Guess why? A lot of it came through the Straits, which incidentally were open before Donald Trump launched that war for Israel. So this is a crisis that they can't contain. It was a tremendous strategic mistake, but it's one of a series of cascading crises that if you can see from recent history, from the financial crisis through COVID and then through these mad wars, you can see that the crises have got out of hand. And if you like, the crisis management has lost control of them. They cannot contain these consequences, and it's going to be impossible to sell this as a win or as stability or as responsible politics to anyone. So I think that that's going to seriously undermine and, in fact, discredit anyone who is invested in any of these mad wars, because we have still not yet seen in the West the profound economic and indeed geopolitical changes that's been caused by them. But we will have to live in that world, and for a fair old time, it's going to be harsher than the one that we had before them.
Well, and that's you know, what I'm really worried about is when the collapse comes, you know, just exactly what it looks like. And of course, you know, I think a lot of people are expecting a collapse like the Soviet Union, where it's rapid and things disintegrate and it becomes chaotic. I foresee a much slower degradation like South Africa, something like that. That's, you know, been going on for decades on end at this point with no sign of reversing. I got to get your input on this story because it came out today and it just goes to everything that you just talked about, especially the financial situation there in the UK. 27 young migrants are hired for every British youngster as youth worklessness fueled by soaring non-EU immigration. So 27 migrants from outside the EU aged under 25 are hired for every British youngster. 27 to 1, right? I mean, this number is astonishing. What is your response to this? And is this going to be a wake-up call for the British people? 27 migrants get employed for every one British kid that can get a job. I mean, that is unbelievable.
This has been going on for years, right? And for various mad political reasons, you can't get a job if you're a normal white British man. You know, if you're English, Irish, Welsh or Scots, right? I mean, when I was in the Army Reserve, one of my friends told me that his mate wanted to be a fireman. And you can't even call you a fighter. You have to be a firefighter now because obviously, you know, you can't mention the word man. For obvious reasons, because the system is mad. And in order to get an interview, he had to pretend to be gay on the form. And he did get an interview, and nobody investigated the claim, and he did get in. But he knew, because of his friends had tried as well, that there's no way of getting in on merit. If you don't tick the box, right, you don't get in. In the Royal Air Force, they stopped training white pilots. They only wanted to train non-white pilots. In various police forces have had this kind of thing as well. In the public sector, in the private sector, there's open discrimination against our people in our own homeland. So you are being systematically excluded from the opportunity to even have a living. Now, I mean, my wife wanted to train as a doctor, and she realized that there was a quota system for the amount of doctors and nurses that would be permitted to be trained from the native population here, because the policy of our so-called National Health Service, which is in fact an international health service, is to recruit them from abroad instead, migrant labour. And when people point to that and they say, oh, well, look how many migrants there are on the NHS. We couldn't do without them. They've displaced our own young people, right, who are willing to serve the nation by ministering to the sick and administering medicine, becoming doctors and nurses, and they're prevented from doing so for mad political reasons. This takes place in the law, in the army, in education, in every area of public administration, in the private and public sector as well. It's insane. It's deliberately and systematically excluding us from the opportunity to even earn a living in our own homelands, which is increasingly why nowhere looks like home anymore. It's completely untenable. Now, what we're offering with Restore Britain is a sane, rational, humane, and orderly resolution of this situation. Because, of course, if we don't have one, the future will be simply unthinkable, be too terrible to contemplate. And once again, that is a duty to avoid. It is the duty of the state to prevent the worst possible outcomes where possible. We will do so because we are dutiful. We are here to serve the nation and our people, and not to monetize, destroy, and dispose of them in order to profit ourselves. That's the change that is coming. We are definitely going to win.
Well, we got 2 minutes left in this segment. How can people support Restore? How can people support you? How can people, you know, put their outrage that they're feeling right now into action to try to solve things?
Well, you can certainly share our stuff on social media for Restore Britain and help us out when we get censored and me maybe thrown into a gulag. You can send me some cheddar cheese because I do get rather upset if I don't have cheddar cheese for 2 days, and they'll probably deprive me of it for very nasty reasons. Finally, I am actually producing, before all this happened, a series, like a television series for LifeSite News, which explains how we got into the state we are in. And it goes into detail about all the things I'm discussing here and some that I haven't, about why the liberal system is in fact a project, a mad project, a satanic one even, to replace our entire Christian civilization with itself. And it's called The State We Are In, and it should be coming out soon. So you can do that. If you want to read my, well, depressingly inevitably, I've got a Substack, you can read that too. And if I don't reply to you on social media, I do try to do so. I've been up to 4 o'clock trying to do so. I think it's terribly impolite to fail to acknowledge people, because I, too, was in Twitter gulag for years and completely excluded and discarded by the system for practically my entire life. So I know how it feels.
Well, so do we, sir. And the great news is you can circumvent the censorship. We can, you know, work together, because the elite are not going to, you know, come pluck us from obscurity and put us on some throne somewhere. It's got to be us. It's got to be us supporting each other and helping each other out. Again, my guest is Frank Wright. Absolutely brilliant. You can find his Substack at frankwriter.com, and that's Frank, WRIGHTER.com, or at Frank Wright on X. Absolutely brilliant. Incredible stuff. Thank you so much, sir. And I look forward to seeing your series on LifeSite News. That sounds very exciting. Is it coming out soon?
It is. Should be soon. And by the way, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak for God, family, and country, and the restoration of our civilization.
My absolute pleasure. This has been a white pill, to be honest with you. I wasn't expecting to come out of this with a glimmer of hope, but you have delivered one. Thank you, sir. That's Frank Wright, ladies and gentlemen. Follow him on X at Frank Wright. FrankWriter.com is his Substack, and of course, support us at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of The Alex Jones Show is live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a bunch more to talk about still today. We'll move on from Europe for now and focus on American politics and the war in Iran. This video was posted by Ivan Raiklin earlier today, and we'll pair it later this hour with a video of Donald Trump making threats against some of our allies in the Middle East. This was posted by Ivan Raiklin earlier today. No new wars, promises made, promises made, certainly made. Let's watch.
And authorize the strike.
The war began exactly 365 days after that dramatic dressing down of the Ukrainian president in the Oval Office.
Operation Epic Fury!
Operation Epic Fury, a joint attack by the United States and Israel.
A year of fighting wars.
President Trump's approval rating hitting a new all-time low.
Now defining Donald Trump's presidency.
Trump's one-time close ally, Tucker Carlson, disgusted.
Tulsi Gabbard, director of national intelligence, has resigned.
U.S. forces conducted self-defense strikes in southern Iran Monday.
New strikes against Iran, even as talks may be moving forward to end the war.
The question now is, could Cuba be next?
No new wars. No new wars. No new wars. That's very good. They thought I was going to start a war. Let me tell you something. I'm going to stop World War III.
Incredibly powerful stuff and incredibly disappointing the Trump administration has been. Of course, he did start the war, the one major war that we were supposed to avoid, that we elected Donald Trump to keep us out of. He instead plunged us into. And folks, I don't think it's a coincidence that in his second administration, Trump has not been bombarded with scandal after scandal fabricated by the mainstream media. I don't think it's a coincidence that he just got an agreement with the IRS that he'll no longer be audited ever, he or his family, for the rest of his life. I don't think it's a coincidence that the insider trading and the corruption of this White House has been greater than anyone ever before, and yet it goes totally unremarked, again, by the mainstream media or by the DOJ or anything. I think he made a deal. What I'm saying is I think he made a deal, and I think he's in on it now. The whole thing, the whole corrupt agenda is now his agenda, and he's pushing it forward with the AI centers, with the Howard Lutnicks, with the offshoring, with the John Paulsons that surround him. He has given himself fully over to the tyrants who are building the digital panopticon all around us. We're going to get into that today and talk about the desperation with which they are building these data centers and what would motivate such desperation and why Donald Trump is walking alongside them step by step, why he is allowing his DOJ to be used politically to set up what I believe to be a new war on terror that will firmly be focused against people like myself and, yes, even people like Hassan Piker. And we'll talk about Hassan Piker this hour, because while my initial knee-jerk reaction was to be happy that this like person who constantly promotes violence and is just obviously a domestic terrorist in waiting, like, good, yeah, screw him. But we're going to look at the details of that. We're going to look into what actually is motivating the prosecution of Hassan Piker and why I think it's deliberately being targeted on Hassan Piker, just like they targeted Alex Jones with the censorship in the first place. They want to target people that they know most other people will go along with their oppression because they've destroyed their reputation in the mainstream. Now, Hassan Piker deserves it, and Alex Jones doesn't. There is some subtlety and some nuance to all of this. But long story short, Donald Trump is on board now with globalism. The Iran war was one major step, but it's not the only one. The AI data centers, the surveillance, and the control grid is going in. Follow us on X at AJN Live. Make sure to share the URL, alexjoneslive.com. The alexjonesstore.com is how you support us, of course. And we've extended the BOGO sale. It's BOGO sups still on the alexjonesstore.com. T3 trifecta iodine tincture and methylene blue tincture. Buy one of those and get a second bottle absolutely free. Of course, it keeps us on air and in the fight. And no matter what you need, there's something for you at thealexjonesstore.com. Unless you're perfect, I mean, unless you're an immortal god being, unless you're, you know, some sort of Nephilim creature that has no pain and never suffers, you know, brain fog and never has trouble sleeping, unless you are, you know, a specimen of physical health that never has any physical ailments whatsoever, there's something for you at The Alex Jones. For all human beings, every mortal human being on the planet can benefit from thealexjonesstore.com. We sell the best supplements in the world, refined, purified, made bioavailable, and with massive discounts. It's amazing, to be honest with you. It's just the perfect setup to keep doing what we're doing. Again, this is what has allowed us to not be subject to the whims of advertisers. It's what's allowed us to build our own platforms when our platforms routinely get stolen from us through legal abuse. We have been able to stay on the air in the fight and the top of the media landscape because you go to thealexjonesstore.com, because you buy fantastic products, because those products are amazing and work well. Then you return and buy more. That is the game plan. That's the business plan. And so far, so good, because you patriots, freedom lovers, God-fearing American citizens gone out and people all over the world have gone to thealexjonesstore.com, purchased a product, kept yourself tip-top condition, and kept us on the air. We cannot thank you enough. We know that people that listen to us aren't exactly the lazy type. You're not exactly the type to live off the government by choice. You work for your dollars, and we appreciate When you spend them at thealexjonesstore.com, we put it directly back into this operation so that we can attempt through peaceful means to reclaim the world that is actively being stolen from us. I thought this was interesting, an interesting corollary to what our guest Frank Wright was talking about when I asked him, you know, why his video went so viral, why it touched so many hearts and pulled on so many heartstrings. And he basically says, because I'm a sane person in an insane world. I simply expressed sanity, and there's such a dearth, there's such a lack of basic sanity, basic acknowledgement of reality in the world that it seems like a unique and unprecedented event. And we're experiencing the same thing here in America. From Jesse Arm on X, he says, this is the best piece yet at distilling what the Spencer Pratt phenomenon is all about. Spencer Pratt, conservative Republican running for governor of California. His rise represents the shattering of the honesty taboo in Los Angeles and other poorly governed big blue cities like it. This says, if you had to distill all of this criticism into something coherent, I think it might just be that Pratt reminds liberals of Donald Trump, who they hate, and he talks about crime, which is bad for lib politicians. People also have a lot to say about the AI-generated campaign advertisement fans have produced on Pratt's behalf, which many pundits incessantly credit to the candidate himself, but it's not clear why they hate these things other than their general appearance of effectiveness. And again, Pratt has nothing to do with them. Still, I do agree the guy's a little bit like Trump, not just in terms of disposition or, from what I can tell thus far, any of Trump's most popular positions. Pratt is just another funny, charismatic white guy from the world of entertainment who obsessively discusses an extremely popular issue. We are not, as good upstanding people in a one-party state controlled by the DNC, supposed to discuss. Right? He's talking about the crime. He's talking about the homelessness. He's talking about the stuff that you're supposed to not just accept, but see as a permanent and inextricable part of being free. Do you remember when Tucker Carlson went to Russia and was showing how the subway systems were clean and free of crime? And what was Jon Stewart's response to this? It was to say, all of the filth and the crime and the chaos in the subway, that's a consequence of freedom. If you hate the filth and crime and being shoved in front of a train on your way back home from work, it's just because you hate freedom, because that's an inextricable part of freedom, is the misery and the chaos and the murder and the death. It's a lie. That's a lie, but that's the lie they want you to believe. So they think that anybody opposing the chaos, anybody who wants to clean up the trash or the crime, really, they're going after your freedom to be abusive jackasses to your fellow citizens. No, that's not a freedom. It's not a freedom that you have. That is you destroying the freedom of other people to live in peace. As we know, peace is a prerequisite of freedom. To a certain extent, Trump's winning issue continues to be immigration, but for Pratt, the winning issue is the obvious fact that many of LA's homeless quote-unquote victims, who Americans are expected to imagine as exclusively a class of sweet-spoken, down-on-their-luck single mothers, are in fact drug-addled criminals. Running as a Democrat in a city controlled entirely by Democrats, from the bureaucrats who run the place to the reporters who cover the bureaucrats, is mostly a sweet gig, but when things start to crumble as badly as they have in LA, and you're completely you've completely defeated the neutered Republican Party you're supposed to keep around for purpose of witch burning, the act of noticing problems becomes taboo. An honesty taboo, if you will. You're not supposed to notice problems. So this is sort of the soft, societally enforced version of what Europe is going through, right? In Europe, they will literally just send you to jail for telling the truth about the outcome of their policies. We don't have that yet, although it is coming. What we have now is people who will simply try to demonize you and call you a fascist and say that you are hateful if you point out the consequences of the policies that they pursue, which inevitably and ubiquitously and exclusively harm the people of the city that they're supposed to help. So there you go. Again, we got, I mean, I can't just have my whole show be showing you videos of what's going on in Europe, but like, do you see that like every single one of these pages is another video of another like random attack of Muslims? I'm going to save it for tomorrow though, because I've been doing too much of that this week. And we've got problems here in America that are compounding, that are building one on top of the other, that are like coalescing into the prison planet dystopian hell world that Alex Jones has been warning about for the last 30 years. It's happening. It's being implemented as we speak. And it's not exactly subtle the way that they're doing it. they're just calling you anti-Semitic for noticing. So I want to try to draw some connections here, draw some lines between things that are occurring that may seem separate, but are in fact very, very related to one another. And this is the thing. I want to talk about what's going on with Hassan, because I don't think that it's legitimate the reason they're going after him. I think it is being very carefully engineered to create the precedent for going after people for their political opinions, utterly eviscerating the First Amendment, but they're doing it in a very careful way to get those of us who are on guard against things like that to go along with it by targeting somebody that we, in general, despise, Hassan Piker. He's sort of the embodiment of everything that's wrong in this country, nepo baby, immigrant, rich boy, cosplaying as a champagne socialist and calling for violence as he attempts to tear down the very country that's given him everything. He's a despicable scumbag. Does he deserve to go to jail for his political opinions? Probably yes, to be honest with you. Yes, he does. So why am I not going along with it? Because I don't trust the people doing it. Here's my question. Do you think Hassan Piker is being investigated because of his activity with Cuba? Do you think that? Do you think that the United States government forced the expulsion of the president of Harvard because of DEI or because of, you know, her copying somebody's work? Do you think that's why they put the pressure on Harvard? Do you? Do you think that TikTok was being forced to be sold from China to David Ellison or Larry Ellison because they were pushing propaganda on the American people, Chinese propaganda? Do you think that's why that happened? See, it's not that complicated. We're doing these things for Israel. We're doing these things against our own people for a foreign state. People wouldn't be happy to know that. So they give it the most thinly veiled disguise you can possibly imagine. They simply assert that, no, this is happening because of something that you agree with. But it's not. It's happening because Israel wants it. So when it comes to Hassan Piker, yes, I do think that the government has more than enough reason to investigate or even prosecute him. Are they doing it because of those reasons? I don't think so. I don't think they are. One of the reasons I don't think they are is because the number of people who have done exactly what Hassan Piker is accused of doing, I guess I should give you the rundown here of what exactly is happening with Hassan Piker and why I don't think it is actually being presented honestly. And now I'm going to compare it to some other people that we know, people like, for example, Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. She did a hell of a lot more than Hassan Piker is even accused of doing with the very same people he's accused of doing it with. Why is she not being charged with this? Because that's not what it's about at the end of the day. What it's about is criticism of Israel. That's why Hassan Piker is being targeted. And I think I have very good reason for believing this, especially with the other stuff that Donald Trump is getting up to. Here it is. Hassan Piker names pro-CCP tycoon Singham as financier of political movements despite nonprofit veneer. Far-left political influencer Hassan Piker identified American Marxist tech tycoon Neville Roy Singham as a major financier behind a network of pro-communist U.S. nonprofits engaged in political advocacy and a lot of political movements, marking the first public acknowledgement from a figure inside the far-left network that organizations in the Singham network are operating with an explicitly political agenda. So I guess my question would be, is Singham being investigated or is it only Hassan Piker? That doesn't make a lot of sense, actually, if you really think about it. About 37 minutes into a six-hour live stream on Monday, headlined Feds Are After Me, punctuated with two cursing emojis, Piker stunned listeners knowledgeable about the intricacies of far-left networks by saying he believes federal investigators are ultimately targeting Singham and the organizations he supports, including Code Pink and self-declared communist organization Answer Coalition and Party for Socialism and Liberation, for the political work that they do. I don't believe them. I don't believe that's what it's really about. I just don't. I think it's because he's anti-Israel. I think that's why they're targeting him. And I think, again, we'll see evidence of this in just a second. But Spencer Pratt, candidate for mayor of Los Angeles. Sorry, I think I said governor earlier. Mayor of Los Angeles. Spencer Pratt says, when I was in my 20s, I was on a TV show. When Karen Bass was in her 20s, she was training in terrorist tactics and guerrilla warfare with communists in Cuba. This was an L.A. Times story back when L.A. Times was still in L.A. and still used to tell the truth. They say a third plaintiff traveled to Cuba to learn guerrilla warfare. Plaintiff Karen Bass, according to a 1973 intelligence document provided to the Times, traveled to Cuba with the 6th contingent of Vinceremos Brigade. The brigade trains revolutionary-prone Americans in terrorist tactics and guerrilla warfare while claiming to harvest sugarcane. Bass, characterized as a brigade leader, returned from Cuba to the U.S., bringing back propaganda literature, the document noted, citing the source without citing the source of the information. So again, it's like, okay, arrest Karen Bass then. I mean, I think you can arrest Karen Bass. Like, when you have these open communistic networks in league with Cuba, in league with people all over the world who are not American, who are pouring money into America to discredit our system, to bring about a communist revolution, when it's happening at an industrial scale all over the country, call me a little bit suspicious when I see one political streamer being targeted for all of this. I don't buy it. I don't think that's what it's about. If it's what it was about, there's a lot of other big targets to go after, like, for example, Mayor Karen Bass, who in the 70s was caught leading communist Marxist training camps in Cuba. And that's kind of a big deal, I would think. You've got, you know, all this other stuff. But let's look at what Hassan Piker, because there is a – this is tricky because they should be going after him. They should be targeting him for his what he's already admitted that he's doing. But think about it this way. Tim Pool and others were targeted because they unknowingly took money from somebody associated with Russia. They weren't taking orders from Russia. They weren't collaborating with Russia. They never even contacted anybody in Russia, but they were investigated because the company they were working for had received, income from Russians. And this was a time when I guess Russia was under sanctions. So what happened was the DOJ investigated them, completely cleared them, found that they had not taken money to be a unregistered foreign agent, because this is what's happening to Hassan. I believe it's under FARA statutes that he's, being pursued. Basically, they're saying you were working as a registered agent, but you never, or an agent for a foreign country, but you never registered as one. And again, I think this is what they did with the DOJ, with Tim Pool and others, was they did the investigation, found nothing to support the investigation, and yet published it anyway in a way that made people believe that these people had taken Russian money. And still to this day, you'll see people say, oh, Tim Pool, the Russian agent, even though he was totally cleared of it, they used it as a, political weapon to target their political enemies. That's not what's happening with Hassan Piker. They're announced, they made it very public and announced that they were doing it because I think the purpose is to normalize this, to normalize the idea that political commentators can be charged with crimes because of their political positions. I think this is bad. I think this is very bad. But we can go to some of the videos of old Chink's nephew, Nepo Champagne Socialist Horse Baby. There's a picture of him as a little boy riding a horse, and he looks like a little Lloyd Fauntleroy, and it's very funny that he now cosplays as a downtrodden revolutionary. Everything he is and believes is complete crap, just in case you weren't aware of that already. We got a few videos of Hassan describing this. And again, I said when I first covered this that they're really out of practice in terms of the whole being subversive agents of rebellion. You're supposed to keep that secret, but they've gone unpunished and basically been told they're heroes for doing this for so long that they just come out and admit it. Let's go to clip number 18 here. Hassan Piker admits on stream the Cuban government reached out to him with a special offer. Let's watch.
I want to go to Cuba. Would you be down?
I fucking love Cuba.
Oh yeah, you'd be down?
Yeah, I filmed the documentary there once.
The Cuban government actually hit my contact from the embassy and told him that if the only thing stopping us from coming to Cuba was the consistent internet access, we can make it happen.
Yeah, Cuba is sick.
Wait, the government reached out to you?
Yeah, that's
so sick. Yeah, of course. It's well, not reach out to me. There's like there's a middleman there. Because I had a doctor from Cuba. Cuba does this thing called medical missions, and they've been doing it since I believe like the 70s, and it's incredibly successful. They have a massive, very robust like medical program because kind of they have to. Because they're under an incredible sanctions regime by the United States of America that the rest of the world thinks is abhorrent, except for America and Israel that keep consistently vetoing it over and over again. But this has created a...
Yeah, so he's like, yeah, the Cuban government got in contact with me. Well, a middleman. They got in contact with a middleman that I'm using to shield myself from, you know... Like, you're not supposed to say that. You're not supposed to say you're using a middleman. A middleman is usually there to keep you away from... you know, being personally involved in the crime you're committing. But, okay, you just came out and said it. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is him naming Neville Royce Singham as being the funder of all of these communistic deconstructionist movements that Hassan Piker champions. Let's watch.
I think that ultimately the target is probably Singham and his operation. From PSL to Answer Coalition to CoPink, like anything that he has ever financed. And it's not new. It's been around for a while, but it's obviously it's held through regardless because like it's ridiculous, right? It's like totally ridiculous to try and stop like the political advocacy of an American citizen, right? Roy Singham is a American citizen. He lives in China now, and he's a centimillionaire. I think he like has almost $1 billion. Not sure how much money he has now, but like he's been a funding vehicle for a lot of like political movements in the country, like a lot of activism, and they hate that. Like the American government hates that, so they're trying to jam him up. You know, they're trying to hit him on anything and everything they possibly can. That's it. That's the goal here. That's the broader goal.
I wish that was the goal, because we should be stopping people who are living in China, millionaires or billionaires who are living in China. From manipulating the American political system by funding gigantic, you know, borderline criminal doxing groups to go after their enemies. We should be going after them. I don't think that's what's happening, though. I don't believe that. I think they're going after people who are anti-Israel, and they're setting up the idea that that alone is enough to, you know, qualify you as a domestic terrorist and a leftist. Now, this is the thing. People are responding positively. They are enjoying the fact that Hassan Piker is being prosecuted, which I am too. Don't get me wrong. He deserves it. And I think it will be funny if he goes to federal prison. I will enjoy that very much. Of course, he may flee to Turkey because he's a dual citizen, because aren't they all? But I think they're setting a precedent here. And I think that we can decode this because it's not all that subtle. It's not all that nuanced the way they're doing this. I'm going to show you two videos that you've probably seen already, but I don't know why nobody else is making the connection. Sebastian Gorka just this week came out talking about how they'd be going after people who are anti-Israel as domestic terrorists, or going after lefties, and he says lefties, although he does a thing where he like starts to say lefty and he's like, well, Americans who something something. But do you remember that the week before that, he talked about Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes being terrorists who were on the left? So when they say lefties, this is the dichotomy I've been talking about for the last 2 years that they're trying to push, which says you either are pro-Israel or you're a left-wing radical. And they're actually incorporating that into the like domestic terror guidelines so that anybody who's anti-Israel, even if you're far right, you will be labeled under the left. So all of the people right now going, oh good, we're going after the left. The Trump administration is you know, breaking things in their rush to imprison the leftists, our leftist enemies. That's you if you don't like Israel. That's you if you're against the data centers. That's you if you're against the prison planet that they're erecting for us. They're calling you left wing. So they've got a bunch of right wingers who don't want data centers, who don't want to be slaves of Israel, cheering on the machine that will soon be turned on them, actually building and contributing to the panopticon that is going to be turned on them because they think it's going to be used on leftists. It's not. That's not the divide the people in power are worried about. I'll lay it on the other side. I'm going to go do an interview that Alex did this week in the last hour of this show, and then Rob Dew will be taking over for me on War Room Live. You can, of course, follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. Follow us at AJ and Live. Make sure you're following at Real Alex Jones. Share the link to the URL, alexjoneslive.com. Now, I'm going to cover a bunch of stuff here that I hope we can draw together. We can, you know, connect the dots. You know, I say I'm a lot of people already know the stars. I'm here to draw the constellation, right? We know these things are happening independently, but how are they all connected? And what image do they create when you look at them all holistically and comprehensively? I think I can figure out what's going on here. So you've got Hassan Piker being targeted. He, of course, is one of the most distasteful and most hated people on the entire left wing. And so you've got a lot of right-wingers going along with it and celebrating it as if it has anything to do with his left-wing positions. And maybe it has some little bit to do with it, but I think it's a heck of a lot more to do with his opposition to Israel. And at the same time that you have this sort of unprecedented expansion of this type of, you know, prosecution to political commentators, because that's what he is, really, at the end of the day. You've got all this other talk about other forms of domestic terror that we're seeing rise, including opposing AI, opposing the data centers being built in your neighborhoods. They're calling you domestic terrorists for this. So what does this mean? What does it all mean? How is it all tied in together? Well, again, I think Sebastian Gorka sort of gives us the key. Well, he gives us the secret message and the decoder ring, right? So in this first one from Ken Klippenstein, who posted this, White House counterterrorism czar Sebastian Gorka says, "We're going to label terrorists as terrorists, whether it's the cartels, whether it's the jihadis, or whether it's the left," and he starts to say left, "the Americans who are left-wing, who are radical because they subscribe to anarchic, anti-fascist, or radical pro-transgender ideology." Again, this is the disguise. This is the costume that they're dressing up their tyranny in. It's not actually about this stuff. If it was, I'd be a little bit more in favor of it, still a little bit concerned about the way that they seem to be lumping in political activism with terrorism. I don't like that. On the other hand, transgenderism is literally an attack on our country and has to be dealt with, but they're not dealing with it, right? They're not dealing with Antifa. They're not dealing with the protesters. I mean, look what's happening in Newark, New Jersey right now with the attacks on ICE. They aren't even cracking down on the violent physical attacks of people barricading the ICE facility so they can block the ICE agents in as they run around committing crimes. I mean, they're not even dealing with that, but you think they're going after Hassan Piker because they care so much about it? Like, please wake up. This has nothing to do with leftism. This has everything to do with building not just the American panopticon, but the world panopticon, America being the greatest barrier to that because of our historical adherence to the First Amendment and the restrictions that we have and what our government's able to do, which is why now they're moving towards more of a corporate style where they'll violate your rights through corporations. That way they can circumvent the restrictions of the Bill of Rights and the other foundational documents that define what we believe to be the proper function of government. Let's go to this video of Sebastian Gorka explaining that they're expanding terrorism to mean their ideological enemies, framing this in a way specifically designed to get the approval of right-wingers who would otherwise be the main barrier to this level of destruction of our rights. Let's watch.
We're going to label terrorists as terrorists. Whether it's cartels, whether it's jihadis, or whether it's sadly the Americans who are left-wing, who are radical, and because they subscribe to some anarchic, anti-fascist, or radically pro-transgender ideology, think they can kill Americans, whether it's six-year-old little baby children at the Annunciation Church and school, or whether it's your friend and my friend, Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, so if you're against this, I guess you just want to kill babies and Charlie Kirk, right? I mean, that's what it's being presented, is you're either in favor of this because you also hate transgenderism, or you're against it because you like killing babies and killing Charlie Kirk, right? Is anybody falling for this? I mean, are you stupid as Sebastian Gorka thinks you are? Because this was him last week. So right there, he's framing the expansion of the definition of terrorism as applied to American citizens by the American government, of which he is a part. Sebastian Gorka has official position in, you know, counter-terror, and he's gunning for Joe Kent's job. Hell, he might get Tulsi Gabbard's job after this. He might be the ODNI if things, you know, proceed at a pace. It'll probably be either him or Elise Stefanik. Either way, it'll be an Israel first subversive in that position, going after Americans who oppose, you know, their ethnic group or their chosen greatest country in the world, Israel. But they're couching it and they're dressing it up in a way to slip under the radar of conservatives who would otherwise be on guard against this. White House counterterrorism czar Sebastian Gorka says, "I'm not sure that Nick Fuentes or Tucker Carlson are conservatives." So, and you remember when this came out, this is what I said. It's because it's not subtle. It's not confusing, like what they're doing. They're going to start arresting left-wingers claiming they're terrorists, and they're going to include Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, probably yours truly, and Alex Jones in that list, because they're defining leftism as opposing the murderous regime of Israel. It's crazy. Yeah, U.S. push allies to chase a new terrorism target, the far left. Oh, those far left groups. Not the transgender people. They're still, you know, operating with impunity. They're not actually destroying DEI. They could, but they're not. It's just another of exactly the same trick being pulled, and we keep falling for it. And I can't understand why. So the last one was the message, right? That they're going to go after leftists. Now here's the decoder ring explaining to you who they mean when they say leftists. All right, let's watch this other video of Sebastian Gorka from Ken Klippenstein.
I'm not sure that Nick Fuentes or Tucker Carlson are conservatives. If you are lauding a Sharia law, if you are saying that there are Muslim states that seem to be better qualitatively than America in terms of freedom and prosperity, I'm not sure that means you're part of the conservative movement. So if you remove those individuals and you understand that they're not conservatives, what's left?
Well, I guess you get to throw them in jail. I guess you get to claim that they're leftists and throw them in prison, even though they're the most right-wing people in the political landscape today. Tucker Carlson, more of a traditional American small government conservative, and Nick Fuentes, more of a radical nationalist, racialist conservative, but both of them very, very far right. But according to Sebastian Gorka, who has a different dichotomy, has a different spectrum upon which he is labeling things, he calls them far left because he intends to go after them legally. Okay? Do we understand now? You can't support them going after people like Hassan Piker. It's a setup to destroy you. Now, if we actually had a right-wing government that actually was focused on domestic American policies and actually was concerned about getting rid of the DEI, the transgenderism, the communist agitation, then I'd be all in favor of this. But that's not who our government is right now. Our government is solely dedicated to pursuing Israel's interests that are at odds with ours. Again, remember what happened with the Harvard president. Remember what happened with TikTok. Right? We're taking on 500,000 Chinese students a year so that Israel can control TikTok. We are paying the price, we are suffering, and Israel is benefiting. That's the arrangement. That's the situation we're in. And it's ubiquitous. It's in every single action the Trump administration takes. That's why I'm very suspicious of things like this. The DOJ wants to know who on Reddit and X is criticizing ICE's tactics. The U.S. Justice Department is seeking the names, addresses, and banking information of Reddit and X users, ratcheting up efforts to identify social media critics of government deportation efforts. Does nobody find it suspicious that they are not arresting the people physically attacking ICE, but they are subpoenaing big tech companies for the real names of anonymous users who criticize ICE? Is that not an inconsistency that makes you question, makes you wonder, makes you think there's an ulterior motive here? You have, as we speak, we can roll the videos as B-roll, mobs of violent activists attacking ICE agents in Newark, New Jersey. They're not getting arrested. They're not getting driven out. They're not getting identified and approached by police and questioned for their activities. So they're not doing that. But they are trying to get your real name because you criticize them online. Again, they're doing things that are in violation of our rights, and they're doing it under the guise of conservatism, under the guise of supporting mass deportations, when they're not even doing mass deportations. So what's it really about? U.S. Attorney's Office for Washington, led by Jeanine Pirro, a close ally of President Donald Trump, has subpoenaed the social media companies as part of criminal investigations, asking for personal information on at least two anonymous posters behind accounts that have chided immigration enforcement efforts, according to reports shared by attorneys for the users. Again, they don't say that they threatened violence. They just say they criticized them. And they're going to get right-wingers to go along with this. Who do you think they're going to be issuing subpoenas to discover the identities of next? Do you think this is the type of precedent we should be setting? Once again, if they're not doing the easiest and obvious thing to solve the problem of these ICE attacks, which I agree are a problem, then why are they doing this extraordinary stuff that isn't going to help? Because they're lying to you, because they're using this as an excuse to go after political dissidents, and it's going to be a short 2 years before the Democrats are in charge of doing the same thing for very dubious excuse, under very dubious excuses. Meanwhile, Candace Owens came out with this video yesterday. Absolute bombshell. Candace Owens exposes how Mitt Romney and Netanyahu used a Boston consulting group to build a massive intelligence alliance, because all of these people, all this Epstein class conspiracy, are coming together, and you know Trump is at the center of this, to institute the global Israeli control grid through data centers, the cyber dome program, constant surveillance, and both governmental and non-governmental doxing agencies like Stop Anti-Semitism or the Canary Mission or Code Pink or any of these. It is a unification of both the corporate, the non-governmental, and the governmental, all being controlled by the same people in all three of these positions, unified and working together, collaborating to build out the digital infrastructure to enslave you. It's very simple. It's happening right in front of you. And this is just another facet of something that at this point is impossible to ignore. Let's go to clip number 12 here. Candace Owens exposes how Mitt Romney and Netanyahu used a Boston consulting group to build a massive intelligence alliance. Let's watch.
But of course, you remember, you recall that we discovered that Utah is indeed a special place, at least to Bibi Netanyahu, because the Romney family holds considerable political power in Utah. You can't think of Utah without thinking of the Romney family. They are effectively Mormon royalty, and Mitt Romney, as it turns out, is best friends with Bibi Netanyahu. They have a bromance that's been documented for years in the press, for over 50 years, longer than I have been alive. These two have been besties. We reminded you that they met at the Boston Consulting Group, where they both worked. And they haven't stopped working together and supporting each other since. I told you guys that Mitt Romney's presidential campaign team actually went over to BYU Jerusalem, where, as it turns out, a lot of CIA agents are recruited from. Their approach to work while they're in school during their studies, very interesting. We've confirmed that. Now, I'm going to remind you also that from the Boston Consulting Group, Mitt Romney founded Bain Capital with an Israeli spy, Robert Maxwell, Elaine Maxwell's father, as one of his seed investors.
Not exactly a coincidence. They're all tied into this together. And think about this, because we've got Sebastian Gorka saying basically that Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes are on the left in a way to, you know, label them as domestic terrorists in order to prosecute them or persecute them politically or legally, rather. And at the same time, and that's because they oppose Israel, essentially. That is their crime they're committing. They're not advocating terrorism. They're not doing anything of the sort. They do oppose Israel and the Israeli control of our government, and that's enough for them. At the same time, you've got people on the left, like Governor of Pennsylvania Josh Shapiro, saying that people who oppose AIPAC could also be considered terrorists of a sort, dangerous anti-Semites that are making the world less safe for Jews. So this is a right-left collaboration here to pretend that they're fighting the far right or far left, the extremist on either side. At the end of the day, the actual dividing line is support of Israel. And places like AIPAC that are obviously foreign agents, they're not the ones being, you know, arrested or subpoenaed by the Trump administration. It's Hassan Piker that's happening to. AIPAC is obviously a, you know, Jewish ethnic supremacist group, as is the ADL, as are all of these organizations. They get to do that. They get to destroy people's lives if they feel that you're in opposition to their goals. But if you oppose them, you're the terrorist. You're the one that will need to be held to account. So this is what the data centers are for. Do you understand? Do you get what I'm saying? They're creating a digital panopticon. The left and the right are in on it together. The people that are supporting Trump are lifelong Democrats and only came over to Trump when it became clear that he was the best for Israel. And they're now using their friendship / control of Trump to create the data centers to surveil and criminalize opposition to them and their agenda, including the very agenda of building the infrastructure they need to carry out the agenda. Do you understand how all-encompassing this truly is? So let's go to Governor Josh Shapiro here. I believe we have that video in the list. I don't see it on my list, but should have here. Governor Josh Shapiro says people who track AIPAC could be anti-Semites. He says that monitoring AIPAC donors is dangerous and it's a way to silence certain voices. I think what we've seen is a weaponization, that danger to our system. So in reality, the weaponization has occurred by AIPAC. They're the ones weaponizing the legal system to go after their opponents. But they're saying that exposing this or talking about this makes you an anti-Semite, makes you a dangerous domestic terrorist. And I guarantee you, Sebastian Gorka is perfectly aligned with leftist liberal Democrat Josh Shapiro in this, because it's not about Democrat and Republican. It's not about patriot versus subversive. It's not about any of that. It's about what benefits Israel. At the end of the day, that's what matters to them. Let's watch.
Has AIPAC now become, in a Democratic primary at least, an anchor around some of these candidates, something to be avoided?
Yeah, I don't know. And look, it's never been an issue in any of my races at the state level, but I do think it has cynically been used by some. I'm going to make this a broad statement, not about the race here in Philly. But I think it's been used cynically by some to try and silence certain voices, to try and say that certain people participating in politics shouldn't count or should be viewed in a toxic way. Now, do I agree with every political decision they've made, every endorsement they made? Of course not.
Have they hurt themselves, do you think, AIPAC?
But I think what we have seen is a weaponization of that. And I think that is a danger for our system. When you have people who are advocating for issues that they feel strongly about and they are having their voices silenced, I think that's a problem in our system.
There's a blurring between being against AIPAC and being against Jewish folks giving money, you're saying?
I think it does get blurred, because now what you are seeing is not, you know, quote unquote AIPAC money or however it was termed, but you're getting the Jews who give to that candidate who also support AIPAC. I think it's very dangerous in our system if you are trying to silence certain voices based on their race, based on their faith, based on their particular ideology.
So again, it's just a satanic inversion of what's actually happening. And that's obvious, right? That AIPAC are the ones who are manipulating our system and that you're allowed to oppose them. But they're basically saying that it's dangerous to oppose them. It's dangerous to oppose people on the basis of their identity, I guess you could say, but of course it's going to go the other way. So again, it's not about left or right. It's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about Israel and America. And these people understand that the opposition to the Israeli war, the opposition to being controlled by Israeli money through organizations like AIPAC is a threat to their power. And so they're putting all of the pieces in place. They're slowly but surely building up all the requisite components to make it illegal to oppose Israel outright in this country. And it already essentially is because of the enforcement mechanisms they have through private organizations like Stop Anti-Semitism, who will destroy your life and are allowed to operate with impunity. So don't tell me that the American government or Donald Trump is going after Hassan Piker because he cares so much about our system. He's in bed with the people destroying it. And so they're trying to create this false dichotomy where they say everybody that's against Israel is on the left, as well as the data center crap. U.S. law enforcement warns anti-tech extremism as AI hatred grows. So they're now claiming that hating data centers makes you a terrorist as well, despite the fact that there's never been terrorist attacks against the data centers. They're, I guess, getting ahead of that. The flock cameras, of course, are the other necessary component of the infrastructure, the flock surveillance triple threat. There's a flock Raven microphone that's attached to telephone poles near you as we speak. It's a fixed acoustic center that constantly monitors an area for gunshot screams and flagged sounds, triangulating their origin and alerting police instantly. Flock cameras, LPR, roadside surveillance cameras, continually capturing plates, vehicle fingerprints, and movement patterns, turning every passing car into a searchable data point for police. And then the Flock Alpha drone, an anonymous police drone that launches from its dock to rapidly track, zoom in on, and follow targets from above, streaming real-time aerial intelligence. And we've got a presentation about that. We're just not going to have enough time to get to it here. We'll have to save that for tomorrow. I am going to continue to cover all of this stuff tomorrow when I'm back here in the studio for the Alex Jones Show, because we've got huge variety of insane things happening. And I'm going to get into the Vine and Trig or Vine and Fig Tree organization as well. That's the pro-Israel organization with ties into the administration. The VFT was at the White House meeting with Sebastian Gorka. Shortly after that White House meeting, I was contacted through a third party and asked to script write for VFT. The individual who contacted me is very publicly Christian and widely perceived as America First. I was told the script would be used to create an AI-generated video on behalf of the White House, specifically for the NSC and Sebastian Gorka. They told me, quote, yeah, we have to do this on behalf of them, the administration, because they don't want it to look like it's actually coming from the White House. You know what I mean? I mean, it worked out for them and Nick Shirley. I was then given a Dropbox link containing research, polling data, internal comments, and strategy material compiled by VFT and the third party involved. Inside the Dropbox were 7 folders. Through these documents, I learned more about what the organization actually does. Their reports monitor major conservative and dissident right accounts and frequently frame those accounts as being vulnerable to or participating in foreign influence operations. The report includes information regarding Nick Fuentes, the Hodge twins, Real Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Jackson Hinkle, Ian Carroll, Mario Nawfall, just to name a few. They also collected polling and response data surrounding Joe Kent's resignation from the administration. So again, Jackson Hinkle, quote-unquote MAGA communist, far-left guy. Ian Carroll, more of a lefty than a hardcore conservative, social conservative right-winger. Hodge twins, basic conservative commenters, far-right dissidents, but, aren't exactly friendly to Israel. It's Israel. Israel is the unifying thing about all these people. So you've got Vine and Fig Tree Network conspiring with Sebastian Gorka to create the framework to label these people and anybody else that opposes Israel as far-left terrorists as they create the data center infrastructure to put into practice the terrorist designation and destroy you without ever even having to present it to a court. It's all happening at the behest of and for the benefit of Israel, and we can declare independence from them once and for all if we feel like it. If we ever wanted to, it wouldn't be that hard.
Now, they were going to have MKUltra hearings 2 weeks ago. They canceled them. Tulsi Gabbard's office got raided. She said, well, they didn't raid it. The CIA didn't raid it because she's above them. She's now resigned or announced her resignation yesterday. They came and grabbed MKUltra files and JFK files. She said, well, they were allowed to. They didn't really raid us. And they had a whistleblower the next day in Congress say, no, they raided it. So what is MKUltra really all about? what's happening here, what's unfolding. We got three special guests to go over all this and talk about it, because you have the weaponized ticks, the weaponized mosquitoes, you have the 5G, we have the Havana syndrome, you have all this other stuff going on. We focus on Trump and this war, but so much of it is a distraction from the Epstein files itself, gets into all the MKUltra. Let's go to Jesse Beltran first, and we've got some of his cohorts there, the maker of Died Suddenly and more, to get into all of this with us right now. But Jesse, thanks for holding while we got behind with all this. You want to give your 35,000-foot view on the world today? Mind Nexus Live, mindnexuslive.com, expert on MK Ultra. I'm not going to get into your whole background, you know, how you basically stumbled into this decades ago, and now it's really all coming out. And then some of the news we're going to be breaking here today and some of the videos you sent.
Well, Alex, you're absolutely right. You know, back in the day, you were the GOAT. You were bringing these topics out before anyone else had. And then, you know, in 2010, when I came to the forefront, everyone called me a tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. So I sought out to prove it objectively through scientific methodology and objective data to show that something was happening to U.S. citizens, not only here in the United States, but I was eventually contacted from citizens all over the globe. And you're absolutely right. This recent confiscation of the MKUltra files is very concerning, because here's the bottom line. All things lead back to Operation Paperclip. When the United States brought over those 1,600 scientists, engineers, and technicians that were recruited into service here to work for us. And a lot of these had were Nazi ties. You know, Kurt Blom was the Nazi biological weapons researcher. He was tried at the Nuremberg trials and acquitted and then brought to work for us. You got Herbert Strughold, who was a father of space medicine, who was linked to aviation experience at Dachau. And then Walker Schreiber, who was the medical administration who conducted human experimentation and was quietly moved to Argentina when his past service. So we protected these Nazi scientists who had already a precursor for doing non-consensual human experimentation. And all the United States did was just mirror and take that to the next level into the MKUltra. And MKUltra, well, Project Artichoke after Paperclip, and Project Artichoke was, you know, how do we basically conquer the human mind? How do we make an adversary into an asset? How do we make someone into a Manchurian candidate? And the theme, and back then, that the United States was fearful of, is, and their reasoning for taking these 600 scientists is because they didn't want the Russians to get a hold of them. And so they were concerned about the brainwashing, because during the return after the Korean War, our POWs seemed very different. And the word entered the American vocabulary in the 1950s called brainwashing. Then you had the arms race for the mind, and then the secrecy that curtailed that. And then Project MKUltra came, and then you had 150 sub-projects from MKUltra. Now, the question I'm posing is, everything is now starting to seamlessly come together into one big picture, and the picture is becoming very, very clear. And the question I pose is, this past pandemic episode that the whole globe just went through, if you Google AI and ask how many lives were lost during that pandemic episode, an AI comes back with 7 million, okay? And after digging through, after recently interviewing the MI6 whistleblower, Ralph Hazel, and interviewing Dr. Jack Cruz, the neurosurgeon, it really sent me down a rabbit hole into really digging down deeper, aside from my investigative services as a technical counter-surveillance investigator. So what I discovered is, and the question that I pose, did we just experience on a global scale premeditative murder, or did we just experience and continue to go through what would be defined as war crimes? And the reason I say this, as I dug down the rabbit hole, what I found is there is a methodology into how over the past few decades that there was a very precise release and deployment of this lipid nano system. You know, prior to 2020, you had this neural contamination that was very, very slow. And how they were doing it was through atmospheric depositions, like decades of saturation by aerating our skies. Then they had the dietary accumulation of these chemicals. And the problem with that is you have an uneven distribution. You really don't know what the doses are when you're sending that out into society. And then you have this osmotic distribution, which is very, very, very chaotic and undetectable. So these were all crude ways of distributing these lipid nano systems. And then after the 2020, the only real way to really do this was to inject it. And this is what the whole globe went through in its experience through those mandated protocols that were being misrepresented to us, and we were not being given full disclosure as to what was in those injections. Now, what this led me down is to discover glyphosate and really dig into why was glyphosate so important to this picture. And what I discovered is back in the early days during the Vietnam era, this bioweapon systems that were being experimented on by a company called Monsanto. And part of that development was a chemical called glyphosate. Now, why is glyphosate important here? It turns out that glyphosate is a very strong interrupter of melanin. And this Dr. Jack Cruz's interview is what drove me down this path. And what I discovered with glyphosate and why it's a melanin disruptor and why would anyone want to do this in mass scale? Now, glyphosate, as it interrupts melanin, melanin, it turns out, is a great protector against EMF exposures, radiation exposures, ultraviolet exposures. And interestingly enough, in the literature, it says that melanin is half as effective as protecting a person as the lead vest when you get an X-ray in a medical facility. And then it is even more protective on carbon-based levels. So why is this important? Glyphosate is massively being distributed not only in our grains, in our cereals, in our foods, in our water. It is completely, basically infiltrated our ecosystem. And unfortunately, our bees, which are dying themselves, also cross-contaminate when they pollinate vegetation. Okay. So for all those listening there, those who eat organically, you're on the right path. But because this is being distributed and completely polluted our ecosystem, we are now in a situation where our natural protective mechanisms against EMF radiation exposure is being compromised. And why is this important? You know, I investigate AHIs, anomalous health incidents, and the Havana syndrome, and we have victims all over the globe now who are experiencing this. Why would you want to go specifically after this? Well, it turns out that melanin, being our natural force field, will inhibit the penetration of these frequencies. So the more melanin you have, the less susceptible you are
So you're saying black people got a leg up on folks?
Everyone who has darker melanation will have be less susceptible to this, and that is true.
Did you see Trump last month talk about 6G, and he goes, oh, 6G, it'll penetrate the skin even more?
Absolutely. And right now, with this combination of synergistic lipid nanotechnology and our exposures to glyphosates, this directly impedes the ability for more and more humans to have that protection. And this is what Dr. Cruz was really aiming at. And interestingly enough, that we have melanin in our neurology, in our brains. And it is a protective neuro mechanism that we naturally have, but that is also being attacked. So if you deplete the ability for all living organisms to protect themselves naturally through EMF exposure, from EMF exposure, then what is the agenda? And if you go to the first clip that we gave, which calls excess deaths in the Australian study that's about to come out, it's being peer reviewed, but it leads into, and this is why I ask, if you Google right now and see how many deaths were attributed worldwide to this COVID experience, it says 7 million. Now, I have a hypothesis that in Australia alone, we're looking at an increase somewhere between 10 and 20 million increase in deaths. I would propose that if we were to get a true, transparent data accumulation of the true death toll on a global basis, that we would probably exceed or equal that of World War II. So if we can pull that video, that clip.
Yes, here's the video from Australia.
So here we're looking at all-cause mortality, Robert. What are these slides showing us?
Okay, we've introduced the topic then of dangers of the vaccine. Yeah. And most statisticians would say that the best way of assessing the danger of any vaccine is to look at the impact on the all-cause mortality. In other words, yeah, we know there's a steady line of mortality within a population, but if something happens and that goes up by 10 or 15%, then generally it's a correlation with whatever's been introduced into that population. Now, the problem with that, which has been widely discussed around the world, has been that you can draw graphs like the one that you can see on the left, which was done by a friend and colleague of mine who is a very excellent statistician on the Australian data. And you'll see that there is a grey area at the top. What you're looking at there is the increasing number of all-cause deaths from a baseline, which is what you would normally expect to see in a particular year. So we're looking over a period of time, over the time from 2021 to 2025.
Yep.
And you can see that there's a overall line, which underneath it, a grey area, which has COVID deaths, and underneath that, it says non-COVID deaths. So in other words, there is an increase in mortality because people are dying from COVID, but there's a more substantive, say nearly two-thirds of the increase in deaths cannot be accounted for by COVID itself. And you can see the dotted line, which puts the level of vaccines, messenger RNA vaccines, genetic vaccines given to that community, the Australian community.
Mm.
So you can see that the all-cause deaths are taking off as the vaccine rollout program begins. Now, the big problem has been that up till now, you can only say that's an association. You can't prove that either the grey area, the grey area does represent the COVID deaths, but you can't say that the red area, the pink area, is caused by the vaccines because it's an association. Quite an extraordinary guy in Japan, if we move to the right-hand graph, a couple of months ago, looked at 21 million people in Japan looking at those who've been vaccinated and those that hadn't, and looked at the mortality rate after vaccination in that 21 million. I had heard that he had 300 volunteers going through this database trying to sort it all out.
Wow.
Now, it's an amazing effort, but it is the first time that instead of just having a general increase in all-cause mortality with an association, here you're actually looking at the increase in mortality of people who were vaccinated. Now, the bottom line you can see is the all-cause mortality in the people who were not vaccinated with messenger RNA vaccine.
And it's flat.
And the dotted line above, which peaks about, it says 90 to 120 days, 3 or 4 months after being vaccinated, that is the mortality that occurs in the vaccinated group. So what makes this a very important study? And look, it's an early study. It's going through the publication records at the moment. But I know an American has taken the basic data and analyzed it himself and come up with the same outcome. So it's pretty solid stuff. But, you know, we're all waiting for it to appear in the...
All right, let's stop right there. This is all great. I already have thousands, I mean, literally thousands of studies, reports. We knew day one what it was, a race immune system. We saw the immediate death spike. They started the shot. We saw the head scientist say, oh, this is great. It's going to raise your immune system. We're going to make all this money. James O'Keefe 3 years ago got the head of Pfizer mRNA to admit, oh, we created the viruses. We can always roll them out. I mean, we know what they're doing, and we already have the mortality numbers. I have a bunch of countries showing this, but it is interesting to have even more information coming out, Jesse.
Yeah, and my point here is the reason why we're wanting to show that is this is premeditative no matter how we look at it. Whether you wanted to call it first-degree murder on a global scale or a war crime, the bottom line is we're all being lied to, and everyone out there who is just sitting back and not standing up, I don't believe they truly understand the seriousness of the situation. Because once they release 6G, 6G is an ideal medium for this graphene oxide that is in the vaccines and our ecosystem and the silicon-based materials that makes us a node. That is when you're going to lose your cognitive liberty. This DARPA, all of the studies, the white papers are saying they are at that level, they will be able to read and write to the human neurology. And when that happens, then you have complete control of a society. And that means that your children will never know what freedom is. This is a direct assault. I was hopeful that this administration would be forthcoming and help those victims, the hundreds of thousands of victims that we have here in the States, but it is not looking very promising. It is my understanding that President Trump recently pushed forward for glyphosate to be legalized and not banned in any way, shape, or form. And
well, he signed a national security directive and executive. He signed a national security directive and executive order saying it has total liability protection. So that's a fact. And you have Tulsi Gabbard resigning. You have just Trump in the last year has gone completely sideways. And it's all come out in court that they know this stuff erases your immune system, glyphosate, all of it. They're bombarding us with stuff that basically kills us. And so what you're saying is MKUltra was gone from low-level test beta to mass rollout to poisonous, to implants with all this stuff that can be energized and controlled. Bill Gates, all of them have the patents, and now it's here. But then why do we suddenly see congressional hearings about it getting canceled? Well, at least the hearings were coming up, Church 2.0. There does seem to be a lot of interest in this, but will it be a day late and a dollar short for humanity?
I think so. If they do not allow that hearing to even take any traction whatsoever into where they will hold someone accountable, nothing is going to change, and we are behind the eight ball. That is basically where we're at. And so that's why it's imperative that, you know, platforms like you tout the truth. We need soldiers. We need true American patriots to stand up for what this country was founded upon. You know, the American dream is basically being confiscated by foreign influence and a bunch of corrupt officials who are just greedy and selfish.
You're absolutely right. And you know, looking at this, I got some more clips we're going to get to and then bring in your associates to talk about that and some of the new developments here. But before we do that, let's some of these other clips. Dr. Peter McCullough, great patriot, top doctor, talking about the mRNA vax and CIA whistleblower outlines alleged COVID cover-ups, demands real accountability. James Erdman III delivers his opening statements, U.S. Senate hearing, alleging retaliation against investigators and failures to protect whistleblowers, while urging Congress to impose stricter oversight on intelligence agencies. And he points out that Event 201, months before COVID, mirrored it. It's basically an inside job. And then Dr. Nick Begich on how they hack your brain. What a great scientist and researcher he is. Let's play those clips back to back and then bring in our other guests with you.
80% of Americans took a vaccine. 20% didn't. 20% did not take a vaccine. The vaccine was never safe enough for me to take. Messenger RNA, devised by Pfizer and Moderna, has been chemically modified to be unassailable to enzymes in the body to be broken down. The messenger RNA is found in the human heart of people who die after the vaccine. It's found in the brain. The spike protein is found everywhere in the body. Three studies now show the spike protein is circulating in the blood for 6 to 9 months after people take the shot. This part of the virus, the lethal part of the virus, in the vaccinated, it's circulating in the blood. And then they take a booster, they get more circulating in the blood. It is a killer protein. It cannot be safe. It was not safe by design. Safety trumps efficacy. We cannot tolerate false drug claims. This is in the peer-reviewed literature. This is not misinformation.
I am a career CIA operations officer, and as you mentioned, I was on joint duty assignment at the Office of Director National Intelligence, Directors Initiatives Group, or the DIG, between March 2025 and April 2026. I was responsible for leading the DIG's investigation into COVID origins, anomalous health incidents, and unidentified anomalous phenomena. I'm here today to discuss the COVID cover-up, the national security implications associated with the DIG's investigative findings, and CIA refusal to comply with lawful oversight, as well as how we remedy these problems. Intelligence community leaders and senior analysts downplayed the possibility that the COVID pandemic originated as a result of a lab incident. Motives are difficult to define given the scope of the DIG's review. Intentional or not, the IC's actions resulted in a cover-up, wasted resources, and a failure to properly inform policymakers. Public health policy would have been very different had the American public been made aware that a virus from a lab in China was going to serve as the foundation for an emergency use authorization mRNA products being mandated by the former administration. Dr. Fauci's role in the cover-up was intentional. Dr. Fauci influenced the analytical process and findings by leveraging his position to ensure the IC consulted with a conflicted list of curated subject matter experts, public health officials, and scientists. This included some of the authors of the paper, The Proximal Origin of SARS-CoV-2, and other public health experts who have been in his orbit for the last 20-plus years. Some of the scientists were part of the Biological Sciences Experts Group, or the BSEG, an office of Director National Intelligence Advisory Body, whose members often receive considerable funding from NIAID and public health agencies. The BSEG scientists influenced national laboratory WMD research, policy decisions, finished analysis, and other intelligence matters, creating misaligned incentives and conflicts of interest, as well as counterintelligence issues. Since 2006, the BSEG consulted part-time on biodefense issues for the IC, while conducting government-funded research and holding academia positions, as well as maintaining roles in public health institutions and serving as members in the National Academy of Science. They receive funding from NIAID and other agencies for vaccine research, USAID's PREDICT project, the Cooperative Threat Reduction Program, and even worked with Chinese scientists on coronavirus and other pathogen studies pursuing vaccines. There was no oversight monitoring how this web of relationships influenced research, policy, and public health in any holistic way for over 20 years. In fact, several of the BSEG scientists helped Dr. Fauci rewrite definitions of gain of function in 2015 to lift a funding pause on dangerous research. Still others participated in planning Event 201 in 2019. This was a coronavirus pandemic tabletop exercise, curiously similar to the events that played out during the COVID-19 pandemic. And it was attended by Dr. Fauci and individuals with IC ties like former DNI Avril Haines.
What a spectacular clip. That was in Congress just a week ago. High-level CIA whistleblower. We all know what he's saying is true because we already know it, up one side, down the other. But to have that has to shake him to their core. He also confirmed that the CIA had raided Tulsi Gabbard. She got told to not embarrass them and just say, oh, they just came and got some MKUltra files and JFK files. But now we know her deputy resigned 3 days ago. Now she resigned. I'm told forced out. Reuters was reporting it, but Steve Bannon's saying it as well. I think her husband does have the cancer, but I think that's a cover story. I want to bring in now with us with Jesse Beltran, Edward Zoll, very smart guy, Baker died suddenly, amazing talk show host and producer, died suddenly on X, real Edward Zoll on X, and the fellow behind the sponsorship of what we're doing, that is a great key letter, the highest quality zeolite you're going to find out there, Matt Hazen at GetMasterpiece.com, that with all the stuff in our environment, the spike protein, the rest of it, you're insane if you're not on this on a regular basis. Simply amazing. And again, that's our sponsors. So be sure and go there because I only sell you stuff that really works. You put that on screen. But I want to go to the other clips a little bit later. But Jesse Beltran, I mean, wow, that piece of history right there, what he was saying and what he was spotlighting and pointing out, just wow, that's got to really send shockwaves through the bad guys. And the fact that Gabbard grabbed all this stuff and had it, and then the CIA goes and grabs it back, and now she's gone, that shows the empire striking back.
Yeah, and it all goes back to complete communism. And you know, Fauci's statute of limitations for lying to Congress, I believe, expires today. So once again, we are letting a mass murderer go free in society. You know, during the Nuremberg Code trials, what scientists and what Dr. Fauci and what others are doing today, they would have been hung. But now they're just given a get out of jail free.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. I'm not lessening what the Nazis did, but I've studied it. Joseph Mengele would blush at what our mad scientists have done.
Absolutely.
Keep going, sorry.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, but that's it. And this is why I'm touting this horn. I've been following people who have been suffering and being tortured 24/7, 350 for the entire year for you know, the past 16 years and silently for a total of over 20 years. And this is just a continuation of non-consensual experimentation that was done during World War II. And the United States has just continued that methodology. It is currently legal. And if everyone's listening out there, this is legal to do to you under Obama's 21st Century Cures Act under Section 3024. It is legal.
No, let me stop you. I want you to start over. I want you to start over. And this is live now. And we post this to X and Rumble later. I'm going to actually put the document up. Because I remember covering it at the time. Imagine that they made it the law, they can even do lethal testing on you under this, and the public needs to understand, like, we're not making this up. Look at how Bill Gates is behind releasing the ticks, behind the mosquitoes. That is violates the Nuremberg Code. They're loading it up with Trojan horses. They killed us with the COVID shot. They're hiding it in plain view. They're just normalizing it. So start over and explain what you just said.
Well, the bottom line is that we just were letting mass murderers go free who would have been hung during the Nuremberg trials. What Fauci has done and others.
Sure, but go over the Obama clause again. The Obama clause.
Yeah, so the Obama clause is the 21st Century Cures Act. That was instituted in 2016 and marketed to American citizens that this is going to fight the opioid epidemic crisis here in the United States. But what they snuck in there is a section called 3024. And under section 3024, it specifically says it is legal to experiment on U.S. citizens without their consent as long as it doesn't exceed minimal risk criteria. So what is minimal risk criteria? The definition is nothing that doesn't happen in normal everyday life. So does death happen in normal everyday life? And the answer to that is yes. So basically, we have given, the government has given these agencies and
a license to kill.
A license to kill. Yeah, without repercussions. And, you know, the United States citizens has to have, everyone needs to band together and have a serious discussion. Is that legal to do? In our own country, does our Constitution allow them to basically assassinate us, the American taxpayer, that supports these entities, to do this to us? Just remember, if it's not about you, then it's about your children. Your children don't have a chance if we don't stand up now. The paradigm shift and the window of opportunity is so narrow right now. If we don't stand up like yesterday, our odds of succeeding in having any viable solution is decreasing at lightning speed.
Well, I know it's all accurate because I covered it back at the time, and they just do all this. You saw that at COVID, they pass a law, but that's what the Supreme Court held. Just because the previous Supreme Court said blacks were 2/3 human, didn't mean they could actually do that. That was wrong. You could pass a law saying you can murder your wife under Sharia law. We say we don't follow that law. We're going to rise up against it. That's what the Right to Revolt's about. And we just have to wake up and grow up and admit this is going on. Now, I want to do a plug here, though, because zeolites, I've been promoting zeolites for 30 years. They're excellent, but you guys have a special zeolite where your sponsor, our sponsor does, that brings in this great, great sea minerals with it. So it doesn't just take the bad stuff out. It replaces the good things. And I want to go to Mr. Zoll here in a moment, the filmmaker and researcher, and his take on the Iran thing and what he sees unfolding there right now. They say they've got a deal. We'll see if that holds. Edward Zoll in a moment. But I wanted to bring in Matt Hazen, who's a great sponsor of what we're doing and also what you're doing, getmasterpiece.com. I heard this was great a year ago. Started taking it about 8 months ago. Absolutely an incredible detoxifier. Great dreams, great skin, clarity. It's very special. So, Matt Hazen, give us your take on what we were just covering, but also because you're good at it, because you're right at the heart of it with the scientists you develop us with. Give us a pitch for Masterpiece, getmasterpiece.com. And they get a discount when they use that link, 10%.
Absolutely, Alex. This has been such a big memorial day we can show for you. We went over something that was really important that we need to unpack, which is glyphosate and what they're actually using glyphosate for in this entire 6G smart grid. It literally lowers your force field so that radiation of poisoning can affect your body on a much higher level. And so, unfortunately, with so many things out there and us all trying to figure out a way to protect ourselves from these things, there's no real companies that have actually done proper third-party clinical studies on things like glyphosate, except with the exception of Masterpiece. Masterpiece, a year and a half ago, performed a 27-people cohort study. This study actually passed through the highest science rigor of gold standard, which is the double-blinded peer-reviewed process. And what we found is in the study participants who took 10 drops a day of Masterpiece, which again is really less than a dollar a day, Alex. We're talking about something that is all natural and is less than a dollar a day. And it removed and reduced, mitigated the glyphosate levels by 71%. Think about that for a second. A lifelong accumulation in a study that was properly documented and passed the double-blinded peer review.
And by the way, I remember reading the study, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys just had the toxicologist looking at everything that's normally in a panel. You weren't even thinking about glyphosate. Yep. And it was, I remember before you even talked to this other scientist down in down in El Salvador when this came out in the last few months. You guys had already found this but didn't know what you had.
You know, yeah, we didn't know the extent of what we were, you know, we didn't know it was the first study that we were going to be studying for glyphosate or that it could get out glyphosate. We really kind of did a study originally on.
But that's how pure science, that's how pure science is you get more pieces of the jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hey, CIA, they do 1,000 different studies on the mind and you get some answers. You build another study, you get more answers, you get more answers. And that's really what happened with us because we are the only place that has actually done proper clinical studies that can boast and talk about their findings openly because it is ironclad scientific fact what we're talking about because it's made the high. I can go into any courtroom in any nation in the world, talk about these results because they have gone through the highest rigor. For less than $1 a day, you can get your aluminum levels out 80%, graphene oxide levels out 90 days by 70-some percent. In our study, and recently, the reason why me and Jesse got to travel the world so much is because he actually we did a Bluetooth study, and he told us you can't tell people like these results as if it means that they have hope because of these results because it's so there's so much more to this internal human biosystem, and that was really awesome that he came aboard and ended up immediately being saying he'd be willing to do the testing. And in those testings, we have the charts if we can show them. But literally where Jesse, who is the right guy for the job, to be able to analyze it, literally took 23 different completed study participants. These are people in United Kingdom. And we can go to, yeah, just keep on zipping. It'll be page 8 or 9. That's page 2. And when we get to page 8, 9, and 10, you're going to see where people's bodies are reflecting or harmonizing. I'm not going to say the perfect words, and Jesse could correct me, but essentially our body should be not be emitting anything to do with synthetic silicon electronic-based circuitry. And when we're talking about people taking Masterpiece, which is removing these semiconductive metals like, such as graphene oxide, plastics such as synthetic silicon, we literally find that 80% of the system was no longer being tested by his nonlinear junction scanner. And what that essentially means is Masterpiece, without us allowing anybody to turn us into a transhuman or a body that is emitting human signals, it removed 80%. It stopped 80% of the signal. How good does their W-band system, how good does their fourth industrial revolution, how good does their plan work if so much of that system is removed out of the bodies? It can't be working nearly as good. And so hopefully there's a lot of other companies coming aboard. We're blessed that we have strong advocates for the truth, mind you, because if Masterpiece wasn't helping, such as the other 100 things that have come by, for instance, Jesse's way in the last 15 years, we wouldn't be talking here on the show and going into this. So, yeah, getmasterpiece.com, everybody. This is the way you protect your family. This is a gentle way to get this stuff out of your body that is preventing you from really having your highest level of holistic health. Yes, your dreams start coming online when you clean out your pineal gland. Yes, you start dreaming a lot deeper. Yes, your hormonal system and digestive systems. Everything in our life is compromised by being poisoned. Something that gets out the poisons this effectively, like Masterpiece, the improvements in your health are going to be very undeniable, period. So, and you're, you know, for you to have this platform, Alex, and be so fearless for so long, it's very inspiring, very motivating, you know.
Well, listen, I've always known that zeolites pull toxins out, but this one particularly, you've done the study. Why does it pull all this garbage out so easily?
It's at a much smaller level. We're dealing with something that's actually smaller than the nanometer size. So when you're dealing with a zeolite that is known to grab all the wide range of toxins and you get it down so deep, it gets to a deeper level that other times when you're just taking powdered zeolite or other type of binders or chelators are not helping. But more, just as importantly, it's not just a zeolite mineral. It is the positive charge sea mineral plasma water, which is the perfect array of minerals that makes up your blood and all your extracellular fluids. So it's carrying in those minerals that your body needs that it's starving for because the toxins are there. And as soon as it grabs out the toxin at those deep, deep levels, it's replenishing with the minerals. And it's amazing to see people's lives across the board. You just kind of hear everybody say the same thing. I've been dealing with this for so long. I start taking Masterpiece and this has gotten measurably better. And it's not a cure all. You still need to take care of yourself. There's no easy button here that just is going to do it all, but this is a huge leg up on their plan. Their in-game plan is very much at frayed and doesn't work when people aren't poisoned, when people aren't connected to the W band, and when they're able to critically think and have the energy to do something about it, seriously.
Absolutely. Going back to Jesse Beltran, then I want to bring in Mr. Zoll to give his take on all these developments. It is heartening, though, that this MKUltra stuff is coming out. Where do you think we are on the timeline? Because like you were saying earlier, we don't have long to really trigger the total Great Awakening. I think we're right on the cusp. What do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, they're fast-forwarding the implementation of 6G. And once that happens, that is the optimal frequency above 100 gigahertz that the graphene oxide is amplified. So it basically, you're a precision antenna, your precision node. That was the whole purpose of this. You know, we talked about the ghost murmur, how they located that the pilot who went down in Iran. They will have the ability to locate any living organism on the planet because this is in everything. So it's so imperative that we get these amplification metals out of our system. You know, the Zeolite Z, the Masterpiece product, is part of the solution. I am now hopeful around the corner that there will be a treatment modality. And surprisingly enough, this is happening with Tier 1 personnel here in the United States that are going through this process, which I can't disclose just yet. But I was pleasantly surprised that when they showed me what they were being given in conjunction with the treatment was the Zeolite Z product, Masterpiece. So there is a huge benefit. This is real. I haven't supported anything in 20 years. This is the first time I ever supported anything, but I had to objectively make sure it worked for my clients because that's who I'm out here fighting for, is everyone who is suffering. And now, pretty much is all of society who's been exposed to these lipid nano particle systems that are out there. So it's imperative that you start getting ahead of the game before that 6G is implemented, because the people who are symptomatic right now, those are the ones who were turned on. Those were the beta tests. But when that 6G is implemented by the people that I work for, but I communicate with in intelligence, is when the whole system is going to be turned on. And that means that every one of you who has been exposed to this will be turned on and become part of that node.
And by the way, we have all the Bill Gates and WF patents. This is really going on. This is a fact. I mean, I'm on video 5 years ago when they did the pandemic saying with the patents, this is nanotech, self-replicating, basically plugs for them to energize and manipulate your physiology. This is Havana syndrome on steroids. Powerful information. Let's bring in Edward Zoll. Tank commander turned filmmaker, investigative journalist, heads the media TLM, which produces for several nationwide conservative shows. The blockbuster COVID documentary Died Suddenly, got COVID, Died Suddenly 2 about to come out, and Died Suddenly on X, real Edward Zoll. Edward, didn't know you'd be here today. I'm glad you could be. Sorry to leave you on hold, but the new studio, we can only bring in two people at once. We're about to expand out to like four. A lot of little bugs to work out here. I mean, we had you in a few weeks ago in studio as one of our first guests. It's great to have you. 35,000 foot view. I mean, all this stuff is a distraction. These wars, all of it, from the Epstein class, from the mad scientist takeover, but also the Iran situation. I know you had some information on that from your sources and where this is all going.
Yeah, so Alex, you hit it right on the head. I think much of what we're experiencing right now is a distraction. And distraction in the sense of, you know, we talk about the war. The war is important to you and I. I mean, look, for many Americans, you know, we look at what's going on with the war. We look at the gas pump. We look at the cost of food. We look at the cost of many of our goods that we need. And, you know, around the globe, Americans have been perceived as either being aggressively mediocre or aggressively evil. As Jesse kind of noted, as I think, honestly, the reason why we've been able to maintain this world order since World War II, it's because we're the most bloodthirsty, the meanest, the most evil of the global powers. And, you know, you think happy-go-lucky America is not going to have this kind of perception. But the truth is, we will kill anybody. It's not even a shock that we've allied with Israel, who will rise up and kill first, whether it be a child, whether it be a schoolgirl, or whether it be an enemy they've sold to us as, you know, an enemy. I mean, we produce for one of the White House outlets, for Gateway Pundit, you know, Jordan Conradson's the correspondent that I work with daily. And so I was just talking to him, Alex, about the meeting that's taking place at the White House. So quickly, the update is, it looks like the United States has essentially surrendered. And I say this because you're looking at the Washington Times article right there in front of you. Iran to announce draft of peace deal within 24 hours. The U.S. and Iran reportedly have come to a deal. And the only thing left right now on the plate is how to sell it to Israel so they will not go ahead and attack on their own. But again, we point back to the distractions. While we're talking about the war, which is important and we have to cover, we're not talking about the deal that just occurred between NVIDIA and China at the basically behest and allowance of the U.S. government, you know, during President Trump's trip to China. Now, why this is important, you know, Jesse mentioned 6G. He mentioned this grid that when it's in place, we have been eliminated from the decision matrix. And what's happening right now? You mentioned this in your interview with Marjorie Taylor Greene and about the concept of maybe there being this administration that survives long past President Trump's second term. And I think the tone and really the pattern that I'm seeing emerge is that you and I, they want the average American to be eliminated from the decision matrix. They don't care if you vote. They don't care if you complain online. They don't care about your opinion. And this is evident, for example, in the notion of what Jeff Bezos just said to CNBC. He said, you know what, we should just cut taxes for all people under the 50% margin. You know, they pay so little anyway. And people like me, you know, the owner of Amazon and the guy that's invested in many of the tech you know, infrastructure that's leading to 6G and leading to the manipulation of individuals through the metals and other structures inside of us. Let us control things. The same concept was covered in your interview, is that there is this mentality that we need to go backwards. Like, the Constitution be damned. Maybe we'll go back to the founding fathers, where instead of its landowners, it's actually its wealth owners, its equity owners in the country. And then
they're getting ready to bring out the social credit score and the universal basic income.
Exactly. You get Americans like us. Hey, guess what? You don't have an ownership stake. Alex Jones, sorry. You're now a peasant. You don't get to have a say because you don't own enough, or you don't have enough of an investment. But look, with Iran and much of what's happening, the terms of what I've just been told of the deal is going to be, it's going to be no nuclear disarmament. So they do not have to give up enriched uranium. Iran doesn't have to give up enriched uranium. The funds, which have been frozen, are going to be unfrozen and given back prior to the signing. And the third thing is going to be that the Strait of Hormuz will remain in control under the Iranian government, but the passage, the number of ships that will be allowed to go through the Strait of Hormuz, will go back to the pre-war era. Now, this all, again, is an admission that the United States cannot stop the Iranians from sending drones and missiles to hit the ships passing through. So essentially, America is saying, I know we've gone on this expedition for 3 months and bankrupted our interceptor arsenal and made an embarrassment of much of our resources in the region, but we are looking for the best possible defeat. And that's what this essentially is. We've announced that we are going to make peace deal on the terms of the Iranian government.
And now we've learned, which Netanyahu said he was doing 9 months ago, that they have Israeli intelligence doxing people, attacking people, censoring people, working with the White House under Gorka, targeting myself and a bunch of others because of a whistleblower that just came out, all the documents. I mean, that is just treason. It's just never ending.
Well, and it's a war. It's civil war between the ODNI and the CIA. And what Jesse's been covering, you have to take this into consideration. If what Jesse's saying is possible, that the U.S. government and other intelligence agencies around the world, and what we've heard again from whistleblowers like Raif Hassam, is that the government through the CIA has the ability to enter the sovereignty of any individual's brains. And able to manipulate them, able to gaslight them, able to see what they're doing, maybe in the future or maybe in the present. You know, this power, if the CIA solely has this, then it doesn't even matter who the president is. Tulsi Gabbard, she was completely outgunned then going into this fight with the CIA because the CIA has essentially said, we're in control. And with this kind of power, maybe the one thing the CIA doesn't want to have public is that they are this powerful, that they are in this form of control. They want to stay behind the scenes. But if you think about it, with much of what we've talked about today, the only thing they want is to want the public to stay asleep. They want to be able to control the public. And when it comes to this glyphosate ruling and many of the things that we're talking about with detoxification, they don't want the public doing any of these things. They want us in fear. They want us in a malleable, dumb, straightened out state that, again, we can remain this perceived aggressively mediocre peasant class. That when it comes to the ability for them to control us, it's very easy, right? They just get us rah-rahing about the next Trump administration or the next ruling for childhood care or these other things. When what really matters, as Jesse's noted, we have this year to take back control of our government. And we have to stand behind people that have actually taken the stand in the government, like Joe Kent. When he resigned, I mean, it would have been great for Tulsi Gabbard to resign in conjunction with him because that would have sent quite the message. But, you know, Tulsi tried to hold on. I mean, I've heard that she tried to hold on because of those documents that the CIA had relinquished over to her office. Well, the CIA wasn't going to wait, again, for her husband's cancer announcement, these other things. The CIA was making sure that even if Tulsi resigns, as she's now announced, she's not resigned yet. She's still in the position, actually. I would encourage the former congresswoman and now director of national intelligence to come out with the information to tell the American public the status, the situation that we're in.
Well, she had so much courage and didn't get backed enough, and she brought out all the cross for Hurricane, the proof of the treason by Obama, nothing was done. And that's what Reuters was reporting, but also Steve Bannon, that she was told to resign. And so what happens to Trump now? Republican leadership is freaking out, so the disaster is coming. The poll numbers show the worst ever.